Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Gamer Horizon podcast. This is episode 18, and I am Alex, and with me, as always, is my partner in crime, Anthony. So, what's up, dude?
Not a whole lot. How about yourself?
A lot of things. Well, first of all, like, the newest thing that we're doing right now is that we're actually recording on a Wednesday.
No longer Sunday.
I know, no longer Sunday, no longer a Saturday. And the main reason why is because of exactly the same reason why we ran into all those issues, like, in the previous episode specifically. You know, remember, like, we released it and then people said we were talking over each other and people actually thought we were so enthusiastic and so excited about what we're talking about. People actually thought that it was just natural until they couldn't figure out what the hell we're talking about.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So what this will allow us to do is, obviously, it's going to suck because it's not as timely as the episodes that we release, because there's going to be like kind of like a slight delay. But what it, you know, we can keep improving like the quality of it, you know? I mean, well, quality is always good, right?
Right.
Yeah, because people probably don't know this, but our previous podcast, that was all delayed. That was actually a whole week that we recorded for the next week, you know?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the good old days. And, of course, I had more time back then. But anyway, so how you doing, man? What's new with you?
Not a whole lot. How about yourself?
You already told me that.
I know. I'm just saying, if there's anything, there's not really anything new other than the games I played.
I mean, and, you know, like since Saturday?
Well, actually, you know, usually I don't play a whole lot when we do these short breaks.
Uh-huh.
But it's a little different this time.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So what have you been playing then?
Well, first of all, I want to talk briefly about the Mortal Kombat Vita port. It's a good port.
Yeah, right? Like, the graphics aren't that good, though. I mean, you can tell, right?
I think it's the backgrounds look fine. It's the character models that suffer the most.
Like, the most noticeable, I think, was when you're in the Colosseum with Shao Kahn. You see, like, you know, like the other replacements to, like, you know, I already forgot the characters, which is kind of sad. The red girl ninja, like, I think Tanya is there and somebody else is there and stuff, but they're just paper cutouts instead of like actual 3D figures.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're it's good, right? Like, I mean, all the combos that I would use work on it.
Well, let's take a look at past Mortal Kombat ports, okay? I have a point.
Okay, are we going to start from all the way back to, like, black and white Game Boy?
Yeah, we're going to talk about... That's the only one I'm going to talk about.
Okay.
Okay, because if you remember that port of Mortal Kombat...
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, too, when Mortal Kombat was released, it was the first time that a game launch was made as a big deal. Mortal Monday, remember Mortal Monday?
Well, I wasn't in the United States at the time, so...
Okay. Back in 1993, I think it was September 13th or something. I could be wrong. 1993, it was Mortal Monday. It was the first time that I remember them making a big deal about a video game launch. Because when video games released prior to that, they would say, oh, you know, April. And it would show up sometime in April.
Right.
And some stores would get them before others. And,
yeah,
you know, you didn't have the midnight launches. Well, Mortal Monday was the first time that we have sort of a set launch. It was like, you get that game. Everybody will get that game on Mortal Monday. Every store in the country.
Right.
And it was a big fucking deal.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much every console at the time that was being supported, except for the NES, and there was going to be an NES port of Mortal Kombat. I don't know if you knew that.
That I didn't know.
Okay, but it got canned for whatever reason.
Well, but, you know, like, what is it, like, freaking 15 colors and stuff like that? I mean, you know, I think if I remember correctly, if we want to talk about, like, digitized characters in an NES game, I think the only one that I can remotely remember that had something like that is also a fighting game, was Pit Fighter.
Oh, Pit Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what a gem that game was.
I know, right?
Shit. Anyway, what happened is Mortal Monday came out, and everything got a port.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, there were two major handhelds back in those days. The Game Gear and the Game Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the Game Boy port. The Game Boy port was so watered down, I think it only had, like, two backgrounds. and like four or five of the characters.
Yeah, it was severely limited from what I can remember. And I think what you're talking about in terms of the levels, I think it was just the pit. And I want to say the one where Shang Tsung is like sitting down on a throne room, but I can't remember.
I was thinking Goro's Lair.
Oh, no, Goro's Lair wasn't. I don't think Goro's Lair was even in there because you fought Goro, you know, on the pit, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, I remember that. You did fight him on the pit, huh?
Yeah, it's so weird. It's like, what? Like, it feels wrong.
And it was such a watered-down port. Now, the reason I brought that up is while the Vita ports, the character models do suffer a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They look a little bit last-gen-ish, I guess. Maybe. But comparatively so, this is a true handheld port of that game.
Yeah.
Because, it, you know, it's not like, oh, we'll take four characters of the, like, 15 or whatever, and just you have all those. Mm-hmm. That's all you get. No, it has the whole cast. Including Kratos and Freddy. And from what I understand, each character has a new costume in this port.
Yeah, well, some characters do. Like, I know that Sub-Zero has the Mortal Kombat 3 version of himself as an unlocked costume.
You can get that in the console version.
Not the MK3 one. The MK2 one, yes.
No, you could get the MK3 one.
No, I'm talking about the unmasked one.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, that's in the console port. You get it when you buy Freddy Krueger.
Really?
Yeah, you get it because when you bought the other characters, you would get new costumes along with the new character and shit.
That's weird. Yeah, I'll have to check. But either way, there is one piece of content that's missing, though, which is Kratos' stage. But that stage was kind of not really fun to play because, like, the screen would shake every single time. And, you know, it's not, you know, how are you going to connect with combos if you can't see where it's connecting? You know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of useless.
I like that stage. Just because of the three fatalities, remember those?
Yeah, the three stage fatalities? Oh, yeah, they were pretty good. But, yeah, it's, like, from a gameplay standpoint, it's like, if somebody picks that level, it's like, okay, like, shake, shake, shake. It's like, it's kind of jarring. And some people actually, like, get, I think, like, from what I've played, like, you know, get dizzy when they play on that level and stuff. It's actually banned in tournaments.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I like that level. But, oh, well, can you do, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that stage isn't in there, but...
Now, okay, I know, like, I've been yakking and stuff, but... So, this is a good Vita port. I mean, it's a good port in general of a fighting game, of course, right?
Yeah, it's got a lot of extra stuff.
So, have you played the extra stuff? Have you played the Second Challenge Tower?
I haven't played Second Challenge Tower yet.
Oh, man. Okay, next time, like, we record, you gotta tell me about it, because I'm kind of curious to see, like, what you feel about the kind of, like, almost like it's a minigame collection, you know, attacked on to Mortal Kombat, which, by the way, is not a bad thing, you know, it's Mortal Kombat being Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat's always added tacked on shit.
Yeah, but which is, you know, they start, and it's funny because people don't know that they've done this since Mortal Kombat 2 in the arcade.
Pong,
yep. You can play Pong.
Oh, fuck.
I think it's like after 100 matches. I can't remember, like, but I know for a fact that Pong is playable.
You know what I do miss about Mortal Kombat, though?
What?
And I don't think this will ever happen again. With the first two games particularly, there were all these urban myths about the game. Like, there were, like, nudity codes and, you know, like, everybody from, like, NBA Jam people were in the game. Do you remember all that shit?
Yeah. There's a lot of, like, kind of rumors and stuff. But I think that there was some of that to a degree, like, in the home console versions of the newest Mortal Kombat, when people were, like, hacking into the code and finding out that Shao Kahn is a complete move list, and people were speculating that, you know, he'll become playable later on and stuff like that. I mean, there's still that. And, you know, Ed Boon, I don't know if you follow him on Twitter, but he's a freaking liar, man. Like, he tries to, like, really, like, you know, like, throw people in a loop, which is, you know, it's kind of funny if you've ever followed him.
Right.
So.
Right. He has a lot of non-gaming stuff. He comments a lot on politics.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I've seen him talk a lot about politics. But anyway, yeah, Mortal Kombat for the Vita is a very good port.
Yeah. I think, though, that next time like they port a Mortal Kombat there, like maybe in the next Mortal Kombat or whatever, they need to kind of take into consideration like the texture quality and stuff that they're going to pack in. Because I had this weird feeling that the main reason why the textures don't look as good is because they were trying to cram it in a specific size for a download. You know what I mean? Like, we know that the PSP is, you know, like the UMD format, I want to say, is like about a gig, you know? And this one is close to like, I think it was like, is it 2 gig or 3 gig or something?
It was a 2 gig download.
Yeah, it was a 2 gig download. So I had this feeling that because they added more features and stuff, that they had to like really crush the texture quality, like really, really small. So I don't know. Like I just feel like, you know, Sony has like this weird size limit still, even though it could be a downloadable game. You know what I mean? And so I don't know. I'm hoping because I mean Ultimate Marvel's Capcom 3 looks fantastic.
Oh, like, that's a good fucking, it looks almost identical to the console.
Exactly. But the thing is, like, you know, the game didn't have that much over the console version to begin with, so even though it had like a bunch of characters, you know, so that's why I kind of speculated that's, you know, why, you know, that game looks the way that it is. And I'm sure, like, they had time to do it. And I'm pretty sure, like, what Ed Boon and company basically said was, like, you know, there's a portable coming out that we've been playing around with. I bet you that we can port it really fast, you know. And then they had the code for Challenge Tower 2, and they did that.
Well, one thing before we move on from Mortal Kombat, some terminology some people may not understand is when you talk about ports, you have ports and then you have enhanced ports.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel the Vita in some ways, not in complete ways, this is a little tricky. That terminology can get tricky, as mm-hmm. you know. But I feel Mortal Kombat for Vita is in a lot of ways an enhanced port of the original. And compared to Marvel versus Capcom, which is a direct port.
Yeah.
So when you talk about ports, enhanced ports is say God, okay, I'll use, I know I talk a lot about Tales, but it's the only thing that can pop in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Tales of Vesperia for the 360,
mm-hmm.
okay, was ported in Japan to the PS3. That's an enhanced port because the enhanced port added more story sequences, you know, a whole new party member, stuff like that. If it was a direct port, there would be no changes.
Right.
So that's just that terminology there.
Yeah. Either way, it's some sort of port.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. You got ports can be tricky.
Yeah, I mean, you know, UMVC3 isn't even a direct port too, because you can use it as a controller for UMVC3 on PS3 also.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. Anyways.
Yeah, it's that's just ports, the wonderful world of gaming, so complicated.
I know. Yeah. So, okay, anything else?
Well, let's see. Oh, they released a bunch of Genesis games yesterday on PSN and Xbox Live Arcade today.
Yeah, did they? I heard that I want to say Wonder Boy 4 got released, which has never come out here.
Yeah, I bought it, but I didn't play it.
Okay,
it's Monster World 4,
Okay.
But it's still part of the Wonder Boy series. And then the one that I did play was Revenge of Shinobi.
Nice.
Okay, so I like Revenge of Shinobi. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad game. But I have a little reservations, and here's the main reason why.
Okay.
I played a lot of Shinobi 3.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, the thing about Shinobi was it had, the Shinobi games had this kind of, it's hard to describe, but with the first one, it had this weird structure
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you rescued hostages and shit like that, and you kind of went around and just hit people and things like that. When Revenge of Shinobi came out, they started adding like ninjutsu techniques like invincibility and things like that.
Right.
And then you could see a lot of precursors like the POW power up, which enhanced your fucking
shurikens and stuff.
Yeah, shurikens, and you know, and then sometimes there would be the trap boxes that would have the bombs.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with Shinobi, Revenge of Shinobi though, is it feels sluggish.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it feels pretty sluggish. It's not a bad game,
mm-hmm.
but and the level design is a little odd. too. It's a little odd. But I'm not bashing the game. Well, I can't.
I get what you're talking about, though, because, like, you know, playing old Genesis games, like, there's some really weird level design decisions that Sega sometimes employs. Like I'm even thinking all the way back to, like, Moonwalker and stuff. Like, you know, there's just, like, people randomly on rooftops and stuff that wouldn't hang out there normally. Like, a little kid is just hanging around, like, in rooftops of stores. And I'm like, what's going on here? And, you know, it's a game, obviously, and it's kind of garnish. So it's kind of like the way that they treat levels is mostly like for its more practical sense, which is, you know, to create challenge as opposed to, you know, like garnish a lot of the time. Like, they'll make tile sets and they don't care if they use tile sets over and over. You know what I mean?
It's interesting you say that, but, like, you really look at this Revenge of the Shinobi, like you said with Moonwalker, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference. Moonwalker did not have a sequel.
Ouch.
Okay. Revenge of Shinobi did, and it's Shinobi 3.
Mm-hmm.
And Shinobi 3 is one of those games and I've told you this millions of times, even going back to TPPPG, our old podcast. I've always thought that game is practically perfection.
Right.
And I think that game is just near perfection. That game does not have a dull level in it. The boss battles are fantastic, and it moves quick. The controls are just nice and tight and
soundtrack
responsive.
Is fantastic.
Oh, yeah. The soundtrack is great. There's not much of a story. I mean, that's maybe the... But who cares? That game's just fucking badass.
Well, that's the thing with old school games, right? I mean, you play them for the gameplay, not really the story, which, you know, it's kind of funny... For me, being, you know, like, coming from that era of, like, playing video games that didn't really have story, and now, you know, coming to where I am right now, where I actually value a lot of story in games, you know, it's very kind of like an interesting transition almost. And, you know, it's kind of funny because I've experienced both, you know, the Shinobi games and the Ninja Gaiden games, which were considered like and heralded as like some of the best. You know, I'm talking about the NES ones. But if like my perfect game of that era would have been if a Ninja Gaiden game would have had like the controls of Shinobi 3, like that would have been incredible.
The thing about the old Ninja Gaidens is I think I played them recently. They're very good games. The problem is when you get towards the end game, because there's all kinds of glitchy shit going on, and there's all kinds of just bad design choices, like how enemies respawn and stuff like that. And they just like throw enemies like waves, like four or five enemies at you at once on jumping platforms while you're in like a middle of a jump or something.
Yeah.
There's just some bad design choices in those latter levels.
It might have just been like some sort of limitation of the engine, I think. But my complaint though with the Ninja Gaiden series is particularly with the bosses at the end, like at the very end. Like all three games pretty much had the most similar like boss battles like you could ever have like in a video game, you know. It's like, okay, so I've been playing Ninja Gaiden 2 for a chance to fight the demon again. It's like, and it's the same freaking strategy I had in the first game but easier, you know. It's like, oh, come on.
What's odd about the Ninja Gaiden games is the middle boss of the, like, there's usually like three final bosses. And the middle one is usually the hardest, because at the end of the first game, you fight your father, which isn't a hard battle.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's that Jaquio battle.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bitch, because that motherfucker has no pattern. Mm-hmm. He's just so fucking random. But then you fight the demon battle, which is just fucking easy.
And it's funny, like the demon battle, which obviously exists in the second game too. It's basically like, you know, like it's just tossing like fireballs up top from its head and stuff. And then, you know, like it's slightly modified in two, but it's basically the same kind of thing. When you see the form, you're like, all right, I know exactly what to do here, you know?
Yeah, it's not a hard battle. But going back to Shinobi though, the Shinobi, you know, I guess the story is evil Zed group comes.
Neo Zed.
Yeah, Neo Zed and whatever. The thing about Shinobi 3, though, on the other hand, is that that game, it's so overlooked. I just, in terms of its design, it's near perfect. Mm-hmm. And I think what's funny about Revenge of Shinobi is it's like, it's one of those cases where the designers, they made a game and they're like, let's take this to the fucking next level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we made a good game, but let's make an even better game. And that's what they did with Shinobi 3.
Right.
And I really do think Shinobi 3, I cannot say anything bad about that game. I don't know if you agree with me, because I know sometimes you're more critical, but that's one of those 16, that's one of the best games from the 16-bit era. Probably in my top, like, four or five games from the 16-bit era.
There's, like, another game that I actually consider in the 16-bit era that is, I feel, I don't know if you agree with this, that kind of comes to that point, like, kind of makes me realize, like, that they were really trying to just freaking come out with every single idea that they could and tried to implement it, you know, like, for their game. Because, like, Shinobi 3 definitely has that. I mean, you're literally on a jet ski, like, and, you know, fighting enemies and stuff like that, coming from the background into the foreground, which is, you know, like, that is not present in the previous games, you know? Like, it's just, you know, something that they said, what would be cool is, you know, if we put Shinobi on a surfboard,
you know? Or on horseback.
Or on horseback, which, you know, is a very ninja thing to do, you know? But and fight, like, ninjas and kites, you know?
What that canyon level! You forgot the canyon level where you're jumping on the boulders?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so let's put them on the boulder.
Well, there's that too, but like I said, like, there's one other game that I think of when I play, like, Shinobi 3, which is, ironically, also the third game in the series, which is Contra Alien Wars on the Super Nintendo. Like, they did some really crazy stuff in that game that, you know, like, there's some hit-or-miss stuff. Like, I think the overhead levels are kind of okay for what they are. They're still fun, you know, because you can still shoot shit. But, like, the some of the level design in that game was just really crazy. And the part where, you know, you're riding missiles to fight, like, the boss, I'm like, who thinks of that? That is, like, the most awesome, like, action sequence I've played in a long time. And they've never managed to capture that, which, you know, is kind of the same with, you know, the Shinobi series. You know, they released Shinobi for the PS2, and somehow they just can't capture that feeling that you had when you played, like, you know, Shinobi 3, or, you know, in Contra's case, like, you know, in Contra 3, you know, like,
Alien Wars. I will agree with you on Shinobi.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did release that 3DS Shinobi, which I have not played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I will say I do disagree with you on Contra, because there's Contra 4.
Oh, that's right. Well, I was thinking particularly with Shattered Soldier, which came close to it, but, you know, wasn't really a runaway hit and stuff. And then, of course, you know, there's Contra Hardcore and all this other crap.
Contra Shattered Soldier is an overlooked game.
It is.
And the reason it's overlooked was it came out... It's a victim of its design, and what I mean being by that is sure, it has 3D graphics, it has all that, but it's a 2D side-scroller. You do not release those even in the last gen as a retail game.
Yeah, it kind of suffered almost the same fate as Strider 2 on the PS1.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why 4 became a hit, because they released it right on the correct platform.
Mm-hmm.
Which was the DS.
And sometimes that's enough to be able to justify it, you know? Like, you know, releasing... Like, imagine if, you know, like... I don't think this is going to happen, but if they re-released it for, you know, like, Xbox Live or PSN, you know? Like, that'd be crazy. Like, that's like an instant moneymaker right there. You know, you have Contra, you have fans of Contra playing it on all platforms. There you go. It's simple port.
Exactly. It would be good. And remind you, too... There's a new they announced a new Contra last year at E3.
Did they?
Yes. And I think it's for the 3DS, but there's no details. I'm hoping, I have a hope that Way Forward is behind it.
Yeah.
And they're still obviously on good terms with Konami, because they're making the Silent Hill game.
Oh, geez, I forgot about that. It's coming out later this month.
Actually, I heard it got delayed till October.
Are you serious?
Yeah, you might want to look that up.
Okay.
Just double check before the end of the show. So, you know, I'm not giving our viewers or you wrong information.
Okay.
But yeah, Yeah, I hope WayForward's behind it, so.
Okay.
So classic games, we'll be talking about those every now and then.
Okay, because you're going to go through, like, the entire Genesis collection and stuff like that you purchased?
It's weird because these Genesis collection things are tricky because I have the Sonic Mega Collection.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a bunch of them on PSN for free.
Mm-hmm.
So I have like Golden Axe and things like that. And then I have Monster World 4 and Revenge of Shinobi. Reason I bought those two though, mm-hmm. was the main reason was because they're not on the compilation discs, mm-hmm. and they've never been released as far as I can tell in any compilations.
Mm-hmm.
And Monster World 4 obviously has been a Japanese only title.
Right.
And it's kind of funny that they went back and they completely retranslated
mm-hmm.
a Genesis game.
Interesting.
So, I don't know. What do you think of those Monster World games, like Alex Kidd and shit?
You know, I've never played any of them. I did play one of them. I think it was the second one on the Genesis, like, for a brief period. And I was okay with it. I mean, it wasn't. You know, it's one of those games where you kind of had to be, like, a fan of it to kind of get into. Because it's, you know, level design is still kind of, you know, it's standard Sega fare, I would say, you know. But, yeah, I kind of enjoyed it from what I remember.
You know what game I might play?
What?
I don't know why I thought of it. And I have it on the Sonic collection. Comic Zone.
That's a good game.
I never really played it.
It's a very creative game. Like it was one of those games where I think I want to say like it was made by Visual Concepts. And by the way, Book of Memories is coming out October 1st, which kind of sucks. But it's a really cool game. It's basically about this artist who gets trapped in his own comic book by the bad guy and stuff. And it's like a really fantastic, like, you know, arcade action game. It's like the sprites and backgrounds are like really colorful and really bright. And no, it's not by Visual Concepts. It's by Sega Technical Institute. So I guess that's like for like it was probably made in the US or something like that. I don't know.
Comic Zone came out like in 95, I think. And
let me check that. Yeah, 95, January 1st.
Okay, so you know what was funny was 95, I was, and I'm going to switch to the next game after this. I just want to say 95 was a pretty interesting year for Genesis because mm-hmm. you had that. And then I believe you finally got Fantasy Star 4, which mm-hmm. is my favorite Fantasy Star of all time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had Fantasy Star 4. Then you had another two games that I think have gotten forgotten. And that's Vector Man.
Yeah.
I liked Vector Man and Vector Man 2.
I never played them.
You never played them? They're pretty good.
Yeah, I was primarily like a Nintendo guy at the time.
Ah, mm-hmm. I see.
Yeah.
Well, but I was anything.
But going back to your talk about Shinobi 3, though, I played Shinobi 3 years later. We're talking PS2 era. That's how good that game is. That's how that game like really stood the test of time. Like when I first played it, I was like, huh. This is actually pretty good. It's too bad I missed it, you know? Like, because I got, like, a Sega Nomad at the time. I think it was, like, the turn of the century. And then
a Sega Nomad, oh,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, Sega Nomad. And, you know, and I got, like, Shinobi 3 with it. And remember, and, you know, because I kind of had, like, this faint memory that it was, like, a really badass game when I saw it being demoed at, like, stores. And I popped it in and played it. And I was like, wow, this is pretty amazing. This is pretty fucking cool, you know? So, you know, I played it and stuff and, you know, and really enjoyed it. You know, played up until, you know, the level where, you know, it was like surfing and stuff like that, which was, of course, badass. And yeah, if you guys want to try it out, like Shinobi 3, freaking awesome.
Yeah, it's on all kinds of compilations. I don't think you can download it.
No, I don't think so.
But it is on the Sonic Mega Collection, which is still easily available.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we don't have to do a time trial on it because we agree that game.
Yeah. Stands the test of time, definitely. The other kind of Shinobi game though that people never mention is Shadow Dancer, which I actually liked.
I never played that one.
Shadow Dancer basically takes the idea from the first game where you're like rescuing, like I almost said rescuing zombies.
Oh shit.
Rescuing civilians and hostages, and you know, adds, you know, adds your dog to it, you know. So basically the difference is Shinobi now has a dog that you can use to sick and kind of like temporarily like stun enemies and stuff, and if you know your dog takes too much damage, like he basically turns into a puppy, so he can't really attack and just bark.
Oh shit.
But it still has all the shinobi tropes, like you have your ninjutsu magic there, and you know, you have the shurikens, which you still have a limit, you know, with, which is really, I always found really weird with shinobi games, that you have 99 shurikens for like your level, and then you run out, you're dead. You know, it's kind of interesting. But I really liked it. I liked that and the arcade version, too. I think Shadow Dancer is also quite overlooked because of just the way that it is. It's a great game, I think.
Shinobi's a pretty solid franchise.
Except the newest ones, as you mentioned.
Ones, yeah. No, the old ones, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the old one. So, let's move on.
So, okay. So, what else?
The big shocker is I got extra money and I got Dragon's Dogma.
I know, that really surprised me.
And I've been playing it, and I kind of put Tails on the back burner, but I'm going to have to take it out because I did promise everyone I will talk about Tails when I do beat it.
I know, I'm like, you can't see me right now, and you know, maybe in a future episode we're going to do voice chat, or like video chat and stuff, but like my face just like I was like, oh my god. You know, like he put a Tails game on the back burner. Wow.
Well, here's the thing about Dragon's Dogma too. Dragon's Dogma is, in my opinion, a very unusual title. I think it is. I think it's an odd game.
How is it odd? It seems, you know, okay, pardon my term, it seems like generic fantasy.
Oh, of course, it's generic fantasy. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah.
But there's just a lot of Japanese quirks there, too, though, that are kind of...
I see.
So, hidden.
So basically, it's like, because when I say generic fantasy, you have a, like, what I really meant by that is you have a certain expectation of what it's going to be. You know, like, you know that there's going to be magic, you know that there's going to be, like, you know, imps and goblins and all that stuff, and, you know, you're going to face the occasional epic monster, you know what I mean? So you're telling me that this has, and, you know, I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here because I have played the game and I will chime in. So you're basically telling me that it also has JRPG elements?
To a degree, I would say.
Okay.
Okay, like... The thing about, like, okay, let's take a look at Skyrim, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You go in somebody's house, you take their stuff, the guards somehow telepathically know you're stealing shit, and,
yeah,
and they're like, blah, 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 blah. In JRPGs, usually in, you know, even the old ones, you go in people's houses, take their stuff, they're standing right in front of you, mm-hmm. They don't give a fuck. That's how Dragon's Dogma is.
That's great.
It's just got all those little quirks. You could go in someone's house and steal all their shit. And then the way NPCs act, like, for example, when you play, say a Western RPG, NPCs, sometimes you can't even talk to them. They'll just walk by and say something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this one, it's kind of got the classic, you know, text box where they just, they'll say useless shit too, like a lot of JRPGs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they'll say, oh, I like fish or something retarded. So.
Nice.
You know. And then of course, there's some, you know, eccentric characters.
Eccentric characters. Okay.
Okay. Character. Like, for example, there's a shopkeeper called Madeline.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ran into her yet?
Where is she located?
She's actually, you meet her in your home village.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have.
Okay. Now let's take a look at that character, because she's a classic Japanese character.
Okay.
In my eyes, all the characters are kind of, you know, Western drably dressed characters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Madeline stands out like a sore fucking thumb.
Really? I didn't think so. Maybe I wasn't like looking at her too much.
Okay. Blonde hair with the braids and just colorful fucking clothing.
Hmm.
And everyone's like, oh, no, dragons are coming. She's like, yeah, I want to start a shop. And she had that, you know, eccentricism.
Is she the girl who basically keeps saying, "I wish I had more stuff to sell you," or am I talking about? Am I thinking of somebody completely different here?
Did you escort her to the fort?
I did not.
Okay, you have not met her yet.
Okay, so there's a different different store then in the first town that I missed.
Well, no, it's not a store. She's a shopkeep. She's a traveling peddler.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay.
Okay, and she's very, all her clothes are super bright, and she's super chirpy, and she's kind of the typical JRPG feminine character that you sometimes run into.
I see, okay. I'll keep an eye out for her.
So there's some unusual stuff going on in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and the title screen song.
Oh, my J-Rock.
Well, it's kind of funny, because I have the PS3 version, and you know how when you have the game on in the XMB menu,
mm-hmm.
You know how there's like, you know, the little box where there's in-game action and the whole background changes to something of the game?
Right.
There's this like classic, like, you know, kind of harmonic orchestrated music, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I put it in, I stood on the menu for a little while, just kind of watching it. And then all of a sudden, you know, this sort of seemingly orchestrated song got all metal. I was like, what the fuck? So I started, and then this guy started singing. I was like, what the hell? So that's inherently Japanese as well. There's some very odd quirks in Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I do like this game a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I really like it a lot. There are things about it. It is not the most polished game, I will say. Now, funny, I was on a forum, not going to mention anybody's name or anything, but I was on a forum, and this guy was saying that, you know, he was talking about how, you know, he was talking about Dragon's Dogma compared to Kingdoms of Amalur and Skyrim, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I could not help and laugh was he put on Dragon's Dogma, not polished, but lots of adventuring and great combat. In Skyrim, he put lots of adventuring, horrible combat, truly polished game on Skyrim. I just had to laugh at
it. Oh, gosh. Yeah, if Skyrim is polished, then somebody needs to look at my leather boots, because they're not.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Skyrim polish, yeah.
Yeah, you're like, what the fuck? But I will say, it's not... It's just that there's some jerky animations at times in Dragon's Dogma.
Mm-hmm.
It seems, and just some weird things going on. But it doesn't feel... But the thing about Skyrim is it's so fucking glitchy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not run into any glitches. And the reason I'm so angry about Skyrim was that my first character that I invested about 25 hours in would not let me proceed in the... You know this.
Yeah, in the Bleak Falls Barrow quest, you did it before you got the quest. And you couldn't proceed because you couldn't turn in the quest.
Yeah, and it was a stupid glitch.
Yeah.
And in Dragon's Dogma, while there's some, you know, maybe some weird, you know, the graphics may not be the best, you know, some jerky animations, I don't run into any game-killing glitches.
I don't know, like, I actually really like the aesthetic of Dragon's Dogma, even though it looks kind of ordinary and it's not as flashy as the landscapes of Kingdoms of Amalur. I actually really like the feel of it because, you know, like, the thing is with Kingdoms of Amalur, as an example, like, you know, you get a sense of people settling in certain areas and stuff, but you don't really get a sense that there's some sort of activity that's happening outside of town. Like, people would be traveling from one place to another. Usually, they're just kind of hanging out in certain areas, but never really venture outside of it. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
In Dragon's Dogma, on the other hand, like, the first town in itself, you see, like, in the daytime, by the way, it has a day and night cycle, you actually see people walking from your sleepy, you know, like starting town all the way up to like the, you know, the fort and stuff where you actually meet your pawns. And I thought that that was actually a pretty neat kind of, you know, kind of detail and stuff, even though, of course, you know, they're all carrying maybe the same shit, even though it's a different person, you know, that you'd be surprised how small things like that lend to the believability of the world. And that's why I'm like really happy about this game.
Yeah, you see people carrying, like, you know, baskets and shit walking to the fort.
Mm-hmm.
and stuff. It's got a lot of character to it. I want to talk a little bit about it too. I will say it's not the most deep story out there in the world, as far as I get. But it seems to have a little bit more personality than Skyrim. Hmm. And what I mean about that is. And I will say, before people get mad and say, well, you know, there's a lot of lore in Skyrim, to be fair, from what I've encountered, Dragon Dogma does not have the deep lore that Skyrim does, as far as I can tell.
Well, right. Isn't that the inherent difference, though? Like I mentioned before, the inherent difference between JRPGs and Western RPGs?
Yeah, yeah. The thing about JRPGs, yeah, like a Tales game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever, Final Fantasy. Even Final, as great as Final Fantasy games are, they don't have like tons of lore.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, maybe there was a big event in the past, and that's about it.
Like it's part of the lore is part of the storytelling device. It isn't something that exists outside, not just outside of the story. You know, like for example, like in Final Fantasy 13, you had all that information, that encyclopedia, but all that stuff is related to the storyline. Like which is why, like, you know, if you want to know something kind of trivial about the world you're in, you really don't get that sometimes, you know?
Or like in Final Fantasy VII, the whole thing with, you know, Genova crashing and killing all the ancients and things like that. That was all relevant to the story.
Mm-hmm, right.
Right. So, in this game, it doesn't seem to have... There seems to be more hints of lore, but you don't get books with, like, stories. And that's one thing I do... I will give credit for Skyrim. I do like collecting books in Skyrim, and I think there's some really well-written stories in there.
Mm-hmm.
They're just fun to read. And there's thousands of stories in that game.
Yeah.
So, for that, it's good. But what's unique about Dragon's Dogma is I felt more connected
mm-hmm.
to the locations and stuff, because... Let's look at Skyrim again, and I'm going to probably get a lot of hate on this. When you play a Skyrim or any Elder Scrolls, you're a prisoner. There's no reason why you're a prisoner. You're just a prisoner.
That's just how you start the game. It's kind of like a pre-existing trope that they've just run with over the past few games.
And they don't ever expand on it at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you're a prisoner, you're released. Okay, everyone seems to forget about that.
Mm-hmm.
And... in this game, what's pretty cool about it is, and it is cliched. I will say that this is very cliche. Your village gets attacked by a dragon.
Uh-huh.
But when I feel more connected to a cliche, I don't care if it's a cliche or not.
Uh-huh.
You know, because when you're in your home village and you know this, you have a sense that, you know, that everyone knows you, that this is your home, and that's that.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's not like you're just some random prisoner with no backstory.
Right.
You know, you have your best friend, Kina, or whatever. You know, everyone seems to know you. They all call you cousin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like, oh, we're glad you're okay. As cliche as those things may be, I feel they can add... They are cliche. They make you feel more connected.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, I think that the little... you know, sequence in the beginning and stuff. Like, I'm not talking about the beginning part, but the one that you get control of your character, your created character. I think that's a good way to kind of almost and pretty much introduce you into the world of Dragon's Dogma and stuff, like, as your character. The main reason why I'm saying your character is because before that, you actually play through kind of like a tutorial section with somebody else and stuff. And you do create, you do have like a create a character that you make, you know, like before you actually play the game. So, but yeah, I think that what's interesting is that it grounds your character in the reality and a situation that's happening in the world. Like obviously all dragons are, you know, are basically like, you know, attacking villages and whatnot and stuff, and unknown terrors are basically like, you know, unleashed and all that. And the thing that happens to you is like really intriguing in itself, because, you know, it's a very fantastical thing. And you know, this is not really a spoiler, so I can say this, but basically the dragon that attacks your town basically steals your heart
And you survive that.
And you survive it somehow. You know, you're like, what? You know, and you know, logically you're like thinking like, how is that even possible? You know, but it does. And you know, it creates some sort of connection between your character and the dragon. And that actually was pretty compelling, like, of a storytelling device to me. And again, I haven't really gotten that far into the game, but that kind of introduction alone made me want to explore the world more and stuff. Not just because, you know, the land is seems interesting to venture forth into, but also that you know that you exist and your existence in the world is not a mistake. Like, you are ordained. You are the Arisen, you know?
And to add to that, too, is side quests. I'm pretty far in the game. Well, not pretty far, but I'm probably further than you are.
How many hours?
I don't know.
Okay.
A lot. I'm in the capital city.
Okay, I am just right before that.
Okay. So, but I've done some side stuff, and what's very interesting about this game is a lot of the side quests, some of the side quests that I do, they don't feel like, you know, the generic, oh, go get me 5 potions or whatever. There are those in there, though. Don't get me wrong.
And there's some tough side quests. They're like, some of these side quests are not easy. Like, for example, like there's a side quest in town, in the first town, where you go down a well and you face these lizard men.
Oh, fuck. I got my ass kicked.
Yeah, I got my ass kicked there. And I thought, like, oh, maybe I need more pawns. So I go to, you know, the city that had, like, the you know, the, what do you call those stones?
The pawn stone, whatever.
Yeah, there's like a stone that basically summons pawns and stuff, and we'll talk about that later. So I got like a full range of pawns and stuff, went in there and got my ass kicked by all of them. And I thought it was just one lizard man, and then like I saw like there's like 5 of them, and I thought like, oh, I'm an archer, I can just freaking pelt them down there. And then they climbed up to my level, and I'm like, oh crap, okay, this is not cool. So, but yeah, there's some amount of strategy to it too. Like, it is a hack and slash. Let's admit, but there's an amount of strategy there involved, especially when you're selecting pawns to go with your party. You know, like, for example, like if you go in a mountain pass, for example, and you have archers or people like throwing boulders at you from, you know, from like a cliff, like up right above you, like you'd be hard pressed to, like, you'd want to have like long range people like archers and stuff like that in your party, you know? So that's kind of like the strategic part that I'm finding that I have to do in this game.
Yeah, like for me, I'm playing as a mage.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, it's kind of funny because it's pretty cool. I can kind of do a little bit of everything. I could attack, buffer my party mates, heal them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm playing as a mage, obviously. And it's pretty neat. And I have an archer. And then my main pawn is this, like, female barbarian chick. And I'm playing a female wizard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of this all-girls party, I guess.
Yeah, that's kind of like my party, too. It's an all-girls party. My main character is a strider, which is, you know, kind of like a rogue-type character, which, you know, like, that's the class that people, that Capcom actually kept on kind of promoting in the videos, the one that can climb, like, monsters and mount them and stuff. And my main pawn is basically this kind of like little girl who's like a really powerful mage and stuff like that and whatnot. But before we get into anything, though, I think we need to talk about the pawns, because we've been talking about it for the past few minutes and people are probably like, what the hell are pawns?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I one thing that surprised me about pawns, too, is they have personality.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least they seem, well, they have personality, and I was shocked by that.
Well, let's start with what the hell are pawns anyway.
Okay. So in the story, pawns are these human-looking creatures that come from some sort of dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know why, but they get connected to the Arisen more so than anybody else.
Yeah, you basically summon the, like, they exist in a place called the Rift, I think it's called.
Yeah, and I'm sure we're going to learn more about the pawns as the game goes. I think this is actually going to have a story that fleshes out a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just have a feeling for that.
Right.
One thing too, I will say, and before we go on pawns, a lot of the story was written by the creator of the Breath of Fire series. I don't know if you knew
Ooh,
that.
Ooh. Okay. All right.
So there's a lot of stuff to do with dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the lore of the world was designed by him, was developed
nice.
By him. So hopefully we'll fight an evil goddess at the end. Because that's how every Breath of Fire ends. You fight a goddess. But anyway, just wanted to add that. But as for the pawns, though, you can create them. And I thought they were going to be pretty mute and just pointless. But you do get attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason you get attached to them is you could give them different voice sets. And like the voice sets give them a different personality. Like my warrior woman, she's pretty arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
And the little girl, she's like the little girl archer I have. She's like all super excited.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about pawns is they have personalities,
mm-hmm.
and they commentate on stuff. They're like, I don't like this place. We should turn back. Mm-hmm. Or they'll be like, oh, I'll take this enemy on. Or you know, or the little girl pawn is like, we should be. You know, she's more cautious and shit. What do you think? Do you agree with that?
Well, I think that there are some. Like, you can totally break that, though. Like, and the main reason why I say that is, like, if you are trying to grind out, like, quests in a town, sometimes they'll say the same things. So, like, for example, is this, like, you go back to town and stuff, like, they'll say, like, is this where you live, Arisen? And I've come back there, like, maybe 5-6 times, and they keep saying that. I'm like, yes, I said that earlier. Yeah, I live here. I mean, it's like, you know, is it because, like, I didn't talk to them and tell and approved and nod my head in approval saying, yeah, this is my hometown? Is that why they keep asking it? But it's like, you know, like, it's pretty specific, though, to the first town. So I'm not sure if that's going to change at all later on. But when I'm venturing out and stuff, it's really interesting because they also have this kind of thing where it's kind of like, I don't know how it's, I forgot what it's called, but it's something with the quest knowledge. Like your characters can actually gain knowledge of the quests. And what's actually interesting about this is, and you know, and we'll talk about this later, is that anything that they, if they learn something from a quest, like they'll actually be able to share it with you, like vocally and stuff.
Well, have you sat down at the knowledge tables with them?
No, not yet.
Okay, you know what those are, right?
No, you haven't seen them.
Okay, what you do there is these are at the, I found them at the pawns places, you know, like the pawns, there's a pawns guild in the capital city.
Okay.
You sit down with them, and you kind of give them, it's kind of like an evaluation. You give them evaluation. They're like, do I talk too much? Do I do this? Do I do that?
Mm.
And you kind of actually increase their personality.
Oh.
And they're like, do you think I'm this way? And the reason she's arrogant is I told her to act arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like giving them a personality and they act that way.
And it's interesting because this is all AI driven, you know?
Like, yeah.
It's not pre-scripted.
Yeah, and she asks, like one time she died in battle, she's all, that last battle, did I fail you because I died? It's really weird. And what's fucking hilarious, again, I'm going to bash on Skyrim again. I'm sorry, it's too easy, you know? But
okay.
I you know what? I pissed off a lot of people today because I said I enjoy Dragon's Dogma on Twitter more so than I have Skyrim,
mm-hmm.
which I think you probably agree.
Yeah, I enjoy it so far, but
yeah.
We'll see.
But what I was going to say about this game, though, was you get companions in the fall in Skyrim.
Mm-hmm.
Now sometimes you'll have to do a quest to get them to side in with you. Mm-hmm. That kind of gives them a little bit of a backstory. But aside from that, when they go on journeys with you, they're relatively mute.
Yeah.
There's no personalities. There's no fleshing out there. And when you talk to them, it's like just giving them fucking orders. What do you want me to do? Stand back? Stand still?
And also, let's not forget that they're just really pack mules.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, they don't really add anything in this game. You have to have the pawns.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's just not enough. You also need to have the right ones.
For certain situations, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can make a difference when you have two wizards and one fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can have two fighters or one rogue or one strider.
Mm-hmm.
And such. So, I mean, it is an interesting game.
It's an interesting experiment. And also, you know, as kind of a side note, Capcom did brag that they had, like, one of the biggest development teams they've ever had in their entire company history work on this game. So it's not just the core Devil May Cry 4 team. It's actually a lot of other people too.
They brought in a lot of their top developers, and like I said, one of them was the Breath of Fire guy.
Mm-hmm.
The Breath of Fire guy was involved in this game.
Yeah. Makes you wonder, like, what he's been doing since the last Breath of Fire. He's probably like, man, when are they going to give me a job? Oh, look, Dragon's Dogma.
Oh, shit.
You know?
Though I don't even think he was involved in the last Breath of Fire game.
Really?
Dragon Quarter?
Really?
I don't think he was involved with it, because if you've actually played Dragon Quarter, it's very different from the other Breath of Fires.
Mm.
It's more of a dungeon crawl
mm-hmm.
than anything else. And then it was the precursor to that feature you see in Dead Rising,
mm-hmm.
where when you could you know, and it made it a requirement, kind of like it does in Dead Rising, where you play through the game to a certain degree, die,
mm-hmm.
and then you start over at the level that you.
Yeah.
But the problem people had with that was this was a longer RPG than just a, you know, something like Dead Rising.
Yeah. Well, I have to ask you, since you're further in the game, are you multi-classing at this point or not yet?
I don't know how to multi-class.
Okay. I know for a fact that once you master your, because you start with like three different classes. You can be a fighter, you can be a strider, or you can be a mage. And every time you, I guess during the course of battle, not necessarily leveling up, you kind of level up in your vocation. So it's kind of a loose job level kind of thing, but it's separate from the main, you know, experience point, you know, kind of setup, I think. But my vocation's
pretty high in mage. I think it's almost mastered.
Like, maybe if it's mastered, I'm assuming it'll allow you to multi-class, or maybe there's a way to actually purchase it somewhere. I think there is a place to purchase other classes and stuff like that. So, but yeah, that'll be interesting to talk about, like, later on once we actually got that far. And I did hear from a friend that a lot of the story will get fleshed out once you get further into the game. And people are clocking the game out at about 20 hours, which is not a bad thing, actually. So
I'm probably about, I'm guessing maybe 10.
Mm-hmm. And that's with the side quests, too.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of side quests.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I did tell you, and I want to take it from a conversation you and I had last night, mm-hmm. when we first started talking about the game, is there's a sense of danger that both a lot of Western RPGs and JRPGs lack that is in this game, I feel.
Yeah, I actually agree. I encountered this actually last night when I was playing, and I was just like being ignorant and stuff. And, you know, I got out of the first, you know, the first town that you visit after, you know, you leave your town and stuff. And, you know, it was already nighttime. So foolish of me, I was like, you know, I have my little lantern that I'm holding and stuff. And I'm on the main path and I see, like, you know, two goblins right in front of me and stuff. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to kick their ass. And then, and of course, I got ambushed by like other wolves and I got my ass kicked. I'm like, wait a second, that's not supposed to happen. These are just regular enemies. What the fuck?
Yeah, and they nighttime is very dangerous in this game.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty bad. And make sure you carry a fucking lantern with you.
Yeah, I tried venturing through a cave without a lantern. Wow, you do not see shit.
Yeah, I think Capcom has done a fantastic job with this game.
Mm-hmm.
I do have some complaints.
Yeah.
Some minor ones. I think the menus are a little too clunky for my taste.
There's two kinds of ways to get to equipment. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't like that too very much. The menus are a little clunky. There are times when my pawns are not responsive to my commands, which I guess is common in other games.
Well, do you think that might be due to their personality? Because remember when you make your main pawn and stuff, you also have a convert, kind of like go through like this book with them and stuff, like, you know, kind of like to define their attitudes.
Maybe, but it was both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was more of an AI issue that they just wanted to attack everything.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. I don't know. But that and there's just some, you know, jerky animations. And one thing, too, I noticed, and I could be wrong, maybe they'll add it later, is there's no fast travel.
There is fast travel, but I think it's much later in the game.
Okay. Yeah, I just, you know, traveling can be a little cumbersome at times at this point, but I think those are my main complaints. I will say this, though, that I don't mind walking in this game as opposed to something like Skyrim because movement seems so fluid.
Yeah, and the running actually is very interesting, that whole mechanic of running, because everything is kind of connected to your stamina, and you can actually, you know, like, unlike most games where, you know, when you're tired, you don't actually get, you know, get stunned. Like, in this game, if you run out of stamina, your character will try to catch their breath, and they'll be vulnerable.
Yeah, exactly. When you dash and shit. Mm-hmm. And also, it has a kind of a very mild Assassin's Creed element going on there, but you could jump on rooftops and shit.
I haven't tried that, but
you haven't jumped on rooftops?
No.
You can jump on rooftops and and run jumps. It's really a lot of fun, actually. You could. That's why I like the movement. Like, you could jump on top of rooftops. Now, it's not as, you know, it doesn't have the options available to you as, say, Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, it's not parkour or anything.
But still, you still have a lot of movement options that are not normally available in these type of games in general. And I thought that was very refreshing.
I think my complaint about this game really is just the fact that you don't have any sort of sidestep maneuver, as, you know, when you're playing the game. Like, you know, like, let's say somebody lunges at you, like, you know, you kind of have to, like, circle strafe around them, which is kind of clunky considering that it is a third-person action game. You know, like, we've had games like, of course, Devil May Cry and God of War, you know, like, not to say that they're the same games, but they're action games that actually provide us with, you know, a means to roll out of, you know, like, you know, an attack or something like that, you know. So, you know, who knows, maybe that'll be more available later and stuff, but, you know.
I didn't get any dodge rolls or anything. I do agree with that. I didn't think of that right away.
Yeah.
But that's a good point. I think a dodge roll would have made. But you know what? Combat is excellent nonetheless.
It is. My Strider has had some really interesting kind of, you know, kind of like encounters because of that. Like, you know, because my character is able to scale, you know, like, huge, you know, monsters and stuff like that. Like, you know, it's almost, I don't want to say it's like Shadow of the Colossus, because it's not that game at all. But, like, you know, you can tell, like, that there's a difference between my character and a fighter and a mage and stuff. You really can tell that there's a difference. And, you know, it's my first time, well, you know, second or third, if you will, like, playing, like, as some sort of roguish character. First time was in Skyrim, second time was in Amalur, that I'm playing like a rogue type character, and I'm actually really enjoying the way that they portrayed rogue type characters here in this game, and I can't wait to see, like, what kind of multi-class kind of options I'm gonna have later.
I like the mage a lot, actually. The mage can be a little frustrating at first. Mm-hmm. But now, as you gain more power, the magic spells become more varied.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you have fire, you know, the typical elements, fire, lightning, ice.
Mm-hmm. Elements, yeah.
Yeah. You can, you know, there's spells that, as you get more power, that you can, like, you can create a fire barrier around you, mm-hmm. or you can, you know, there's this badass one where you create a lightning whip, and you could just get into melee action, just whip the shit out of multiple enemies.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it felt like D&D old school Dungeons and Dragons spellcasting, not fourth edition, but old school. Because in old school Dungeons and Dragons, you wizards are pretty weak. Even their spells are not that great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it felt. But now that you gain more powerful, now that I'm what, level 14, 15, I think. Mm-hmm. I think 17, maybe. I'm level 15 at the very least. I feel you get that sense when, like you do in Dungeons and Dragons, where your spells become, you know, you feel like you're gaining more power.
So,
and that sense of accomplishment with the wizard.
So I do have a question with that. Like, how do you power up, like, let's say, like, a fire spell? Is it kind of like a system where you spend some sort of points in order to upgrade it to level 2, or it doesn't even have that?
You go to inns and you upgrade your skills.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for every class. Have you done that?
The only thing that I've done is I purchased new skills with discipline points, and the thing.
Yeah, that's what I was talking. That's the same thing.
Okay, because the thing is, like, there, like, when you level up, you actually gain these things called discipline points, and that's how you actually purchase different skills and abilities. Now, can you use those discipline points to level up those skills?
Yeah, and of course you get those spells as they go up. For example, a basic fire spell is called Ingle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once you get to a certain point, you could buy High Ingle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And High Ingle is very destructive, because what Ingle does is it's a fire blast that knocks enemies back.
Mm.
With High Ingle, you just fucking, you use that shit, and it's just a just big old fireballs just blasting. And if one hits, it could strike like three enemies at once.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to regular Ingle, which just knocks one enemy back. Because what Ingle was good for, in general, was just knocking enemies back and doing damage. That way, you know, like, if an ally is being attacked by multiple enemies, you could get one off him.
Mm-hmm.
With High Ingle, you could get multiple enemies out. Uh-huh. And even just kill them rather quickly, because it's a pretty powerful spell.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I was not planning on buying this, but I need to put this game in the case for now, hide it, and play Tales. I'm not saying Tales is any worse or anything. Mm-hmm. I love Tales of Graces. And in terms of story, too, to be fair, I think Tales has a better story.
Oh, yes.
But so far, I don't know. But it's going to be very hard for me to put that game in. And then, of course, I have not touched Ghost Recon because of fucking Dragon's Dogma. And I was pretty pumped. Only problem with Ghost Recon, though, I will say this before we move on. I was telling you this yesterday. 6.5 gig install.
Well, it's no problem with me. I have a 1 terabyte hard drive on my PS3.
I still have the internal 120, and I have about 20 gigs left, so.
Yeah, I don't know how big Dragon's Dogma is. I think it's like 7.9 gigs or something when I installed it on my Xbox 360.
I didn't install it. You don't install it on the PS3 version.
Interesting.
And you know what? You know what's shocking is the load times are not long.
Yeah, they're decent. Like, that's, you know, it's not that bad. It wasn't noticeable at all. Like, yeah. Well, it's not that it wasn't noticeable. It wasn't noticeably long.
Yeah.
Right, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, so, good game. I gotta say, I'm impressed with it.
Hey, you know, I've been pining for that game for 2 years. 2 years since TGS came out. And it came out on TGS, and no one cared because everybody was going gaga over, like, Resident Evil Revelations and Operation Raccoon City. But no, I was like, hey, Dragon's Dogma, that seems like a very interesting game. I'm gonna check it out.
So, are you disappointed by it?
No, it's everything that I thought the game was going to be, which is, hey, the Devil May Cry team is a really good team, even though I didn't like 4. Like, they're a very competent action team. Like, they make some really good action games, you know? So, combining RPG, you know what it is? Like, to me, like, what I feel like when I play this game, it's like Zelda with, like, multiple characters.
Let me ask you a question. I know you're very critical of these type of games, the open world RPG.
Yeah,
I know you liked Armalore to an extent, but you know, you kind of shelved it.
Mm-hmm.
Skyrim, we all know how you feel about that game. You feel it's probably one of the most overrated games ever. This one, you're obviously enjoying more than those two. And I haven't even touched Armalore, so I can't say anything. I wanted to ask you, what separates this game? What makes it special as opposed to those other two?
Well, okay, let me make this clear. Armalore is still fantastic. Like, the reason why I haven't played that game is because, of course, there's other games that came out, namely Mass Effect 3. You know, I just haven't gotten around to it. Like, I feel like I want to buy, like, all the expansions at the same time before I actually push on to the last part of the game. And, you know, it's, Amalur is really good, especially when you're a guy who loves combo-based gameplay and RPGs. Like, that is truly the mix between something like God of War and, you know, an RPG. Like, that is bar none. Like, that's really what it is. And just the amount of content you have there for $60, geez, that's like 300 hours worth of content. With that said, Dragon's Dogma is a game that delivers close to that, which is, you know, like the action combo-based gameplay without the complexities of juggling and all that stuff. And then adding in the element of the pawns, which is kind of this weird, like, I want to say Fable 2-ish kind of thing, where you can, like, and this is something that we glossed over, by the way. Pawns, you know, and I'm going to go back to pawns, and then I'll answer your question. Pawns are actually generated by other players as well. So when you actually recruit pawns, their pawns, what will happen is all the experience and gold and loot that they actually got from your friend's game or some stranger's game, they actually return to your game and give it to you.
Yeah, that's happened to me several times already.
Yeah. So, like, I have a friend who's playing it right now. I actually, like, recruited their pawn, and, you know, like, you know, she's helping me out and stuff in my party. But in any case, so there's that element of it, which is kind of Fable-y, because if you remember in Fable, you can join your friend's game and kind of, you know, play together, and then when you get back to your game, you basically have all that experience and gold and stuff that you basically gained when you were playing with your friend, you know?
Right.
I like that aspect of it, but also I like the fact that you are not this, and this is what I like about this game over Skyrim and Amalur, is that you're not alone. You're always with your, at least your main pawn and all the companions that you have and stuff.
And they're not quiet.
And yeah, and they have, I don't, it's kind of scary sometimes because the AI could be so convincing at times. You know, but it kind of breaks for me, like, when they start talking over each other, which I've had happen twice, but just that's just because I abuse the run button like crazy, you know?
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I like it because of that, and it's a different take on an existing formula. Like, Capcom was the only company that basically said, well, let's try it with more than one person. You know, like, we've seen Skyrim, we've seen Oblivion, we've seen Kingdoms of Amalur. Let's try it with, you know, with allowing the player to actually control, like, you know, more than one character. Like, you don't directly control the other pawns, but, you know, it's nice to be able to kind of have that sort of feel of being able to explore a countryside with a companion and stuff, even if your companions are basically indirectly related to friends of yours that are playing the game, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think it's fantastic. It's better than I thought it was going to be. So
yeah, I really think that the pawn system is their selling point. Not just the big hydras and griffins that you're facing and stuff, but it's those are kind of the things that really make you know, want to, you know, play the game over and over and stuff. But like really, like the pawn system, I think, is brilliant and kind of, you know, it's pretty crafty. I have to say.
And those battles against the bigger creatures feel more substantially better than they do in Skyrim. Because you can actually climb on them and shit.
Well, yeah, as a strider, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, I climb on them.
Really?
Yeah, I've climbed on them. I've grabbed them to their leg and shit. What's cool about it is you can, there's more interactivity. Like in Skyrim, it's like, oh, slash giant. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, cool. That's something that's been lacking in the Elder Scrolls games anyway, is the combat. But something, I actually just thought of something, Anthony, and I think you're gonna laugh at this. It just occurred to me that you're right. Like every single character in the Elder Scrolls series, from what I know, you know, so you start off as a prisoner. So, what's going to happen then when the online game comes out?
Oh, shit. You're all prisoners?
Yeah, you're all, like, in a correctional facility? Are you all going to do, like, a major breakout? Is that what's going to happen? I mean, how is this going to work?
A mass execution?
Yeah. Well, no, like, mass, like, escape, you know? It's like prison break, or, like, that, you know, those fools who escape from Alcatraz or something.
You know? Oh, shit.
You know, because I'm like, I just thought of that. I'm like, wait a second. If, like, hundreds and hundreds of people are going to play this game, are they all going to be prisoners?
I don't hate Elder Scrolls.
I think they have well-established tropes, you know, because of how long the series has been. And I think that, in a way, it's their way of kind of paying homage to the previous games. It's not necessarily my knock on it, but you do have a point about that fact where there doesn't seem to be, like, a finite backstory. Although I have to say, though, that there is a kind of, from what I've been reading a lot about Skyrim and Elder Scrolls and stuff, there's a weird kind of backstory to Sheogorath, which is one of the I forgot what they're called. I think they're Alduin gods, I want to say. That's actually connected to Oblivion, which is kind of weird.
I don't hate the Elder Scrolls. They kind of... I have the same problems that I do with, say, Dragon Quest.
Mm-hmm.
I think my problems with Dragon Quest, and I don't hate Dragon Quest either, but Dragon Quest has this issue with that I have issue with is that there's some very archaic game designs that don't age well, mm-hmm. and they keep sticking to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, for example, going to the church to find out how much experience you need to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Elder Scrolls suffers from that in terms of their combat.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, it's like the same thing. They refuse. They absolutely refuse. They're like, oh, combat's improved. It's improved from Oblivion, but that's not saying much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could shield bash, whoopee doo, you know?
Yeah.
It's like they're stuck in that archaic rut with combat. Mm-hmm. That's my problem.
Right.
It's the same problem that I have with Dragon Quest.
I mean,
so.
It's different from... you know, people can argue that that's kind of like what the series has had for a while. And, you know, that it's kind of similar to like if Mario gets like a Fire Flower and stuff. But the thing is, people didn't really complain about Mario's Fire Flower. Like in this case, like people complain about, you know, just the game, the sword fighting and the combat not having depth in Skyrim. So that's why I'm kind of confused as to why they keep sticking to it. Because if it wasn't good before, then it's not going to be good again, you know, like magically in the next game, you know, like if you keep it with the same thing. But yeah, otherwise, like going back to Dragon's Dogma, there's a lot of features in the game that I really like. Like, for example, the damage system, where if you get damaged to a certain point, you don't get all your full life back. You have to actually either stay in an inn or eat, you know, to get the rest of your life back, you know, to kind of simulate damage, you know.
Before, can I interrupt you for a second? There's something that's bugging me.
Mm.
You have not played anything else other than Dragon's Dogma since Saturday, right?
No, I have played one other game. It's not Max Payne, though.
Oh, shit. Okay, you better beat that game.
I am. I am going to beat that game.
Okay. The reason I'm asking this is because usually I ask you what to play, but we're kind of on this tangent about Dragon's Dogma.
Uh-huh.
So I was just seeing if there's anything else you're playing of note.
Yeah, actually, so Dragon's Dogma, pretty good game. Pick it up. That's all we're going to say about that, right? Unless you want to add anything more.
Hopefully next week I'll talk about Ghost Recon.
Yeah, once we play more of Dragon's Dogma, we'll talk about it again and stuff. Okay, so the other game I've been playing, and actually I finished it before we started this podcast, is Plants vs. Zombies.
Oh.
The rooftop level is the last level of the game. Thank goodness. Because that game got crazy at the end. They have a last boss, Anthony.
Oh, God.
Yes. And he had a life bar.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I had to throw all my plants at him. That's how insane it got.
Did you get an ending?
Yes, I did.
What was the ending?
I got a nice letter from the zombie saying that they really didn't want it. They're going to stop wanting to eat my brains and they want to make a music video with me.
Oh, that's better than the Final Fantasy VI ending.
Jeez. Well, the ending is basically the viral video that they released to promote the game, which is, you know, the sunflower ringing, singing, there are zombies in my lawn. And it's actually a pretty neat kind of, you know, music video and stuff. And, you know, there's the credits and stuff, and it's like, yay. But what's interesting, though, is the new game plus, which actually allows you to use all the plants that you've collected from the whole adventure and being able to use that in the early levels onward.
Nice.
So that kind of throws a wrench into the whole formula. And it's actually really interesting because I'm so overpowered right now and it's just ridiculous. And you do get money now this time around. You don't get items anymore because you have all the plants. You basically get more money to be able to spend. And even though you finish the game, there's still more to unlock because over the past 2 years, they've actually added more games and more mini games and more features to unlock, you know, in the game itself. So
through patches,
yes, free patches.
That is generous of them.
Yep.
Can't say that about much other developers out there. So nothing else.
Let's see, that's really mainly it. I played a slight bit of like Max Payne 3, but you know, I'm trying to still kind of get the hang of the, you know, when to do bullet time and when to do you know, shot dodging and stuff, and when to jump out of cover. But the story is really interesting so far, and I can't really talk too much about it right now, but I did hear that a friend of mine actually finished it in 3 sittings, so I'll have to see like if I can hammer through that like either this week or next week and stuff. But
we'll see.
But I really want to play Dragon's Dogma, but I'm gonna put it right back in its case, hide it like what you're doing, and just so I can like just play through Max Payne 3.
Before we go on, I gotta say, the next couple weeks in terms of game playing, you know, things are going to get crazy around here. Mm-hmm. E3 is approaching.
Fast approaching, yes.
Rumors are all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
From what I'm understanding, you know, I remember I talked about a rumor about Final Fantasy 15, but there's all kinds of other rumors going around.
Mm-hmm.
And I will again, and we're going to sound like dead horses. I'm going to keep repeating until either I'm proven wrong or I'm proven right at E3. This is probably going to be one of the best E3s ever.
This is probably going to be the best E3 ever since, I want to say, 2008?
2008 was good for both Sony and not Nintendo. Nintendo had a horrible press conference.
Yeah.
Miyamoto with the Wiimote as a flute.
Oh, remember that?
Poor guy. I mean, he deserves better than that. Mm-hmm. My God.
Yeah.
He created fucking Mario and Zelda, for God's sakes. He doesn't need... Anyway.
Yeah.
God.
Sony and Microsoft, you meant.
Yeah, Sony and Microsoft. I remember they had pretty good E3. That was the E3 where Microsoft shocked the world.
Mm-hmm.
When they announced Final Fantasy 13 was coming to the console.
Yeah.
That pissed off a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of people blame that for why the game is the way it is, but who knows?
Well, there's a lot of, there's a lot of other problems with that. Just the fact that it had a ridiculous, like, development period. I think that's, like, the biggest problem with that game. Anyways, that was the year where they announced, like, a whole shitload of games, and it just blew up, like, in the holiday season. Like, it was one of the best holiday seasons ever. You know,
yeah, it was
in a very long time. And 4 years later, we find ourselves in the exact same spot as we were before, only that a lot of the games are getting pushed back to next year. And with that, I'm going to use that to segment into our news log segment.
Okay, so what's on the news?
The first 3 things, and I'm just going to read them back to back to back. Aliens Colonial Marines gets pushed to February 2013. Devil May Cry reboot pushed to January 2013, and the XCOM shooter is pushed to 2013.
Okay. I am interested in Aliens Colonial Marines.
Yeah, you got me interested in that, yes.
I'm super pumped.
Devil May Cry is shaping up to be an interesting game.
Devil May Cry as well. I'm interested in the reboot. I'm not the biggest fan of that series. I've said that. I love the first game.
Mm-hmm.
I just had problems with its sequels. They were all uneven.
2 was the Reddit stepchild of the series. 3 was just crazy difficult. Like, even more difficult than Ninja Gaiden.
You know what? I like difficult games, but when you get to... But to me, it has to be, like... Okay, let's put it in this way. Ninja Gaiden, for example, you expect it to be difficult, so you know it's going to be difficult. Mm-hmm. The Demon Souls or the Souls games, mm-hmm, from Software, you know those are going to be difficult. Mm-hmm. You go in expecting it. The problem with Devil May Cry, it was well-balanced, very well-made, very focused first game. Very, you know, second game was, you could beat it in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Ridiculous. You had a third game where, let's make it difficult. They made it too difficult. And then the fourth game, I don't know what the hell happened there, so...
Yeah, well, I think that the issue with the third game is that they didn't teach players, the reason why it was difficult, it wasn't because it was difficult per se, but it was because the game didn't really prepare the player for that difficulty. Like, it's as if, like, somebody hands you a weapon that you've never seen before, and this is kind of a loose kind of comparison, and... not telling you how to press the trigger or make it fire.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, you didn't know how, like, they gave you, like, oh, you have, like, three different styles now. That's awesome. What the hell did they mean? Like, what are those three styles? And I think that was, like, a lot of people were arguing with me on this. I mean, it's still a great game, I feel. But I think that there's a lot of missed opportunity as far as the third game is concerned to kind of, like, really show you the ropes. Like, there is a learning curve that most games have that will teach you how each things work. But in Devil May Cry 3, the second level, they just throw you to the wolves.
So I agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
Now with this new Devil May Cry, I know you're pretty critical of Ninja Theory's work. I think they're solid to a degree. I think they have a lot of things to learn,
mm-hmm.
but I think they're pretty solid. I really like Enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a $60 game.
Mm-hmm.
I was happy to buy it for the $17 I got it for.
Mm-hmm.
But I think from what I'm seeing of this, I'm actually pretty excited for a Devil May Cry game.
Well, I saw the recent trailers, and I'm actually, you know, kind of considering it. But it we'll have to see what else comes out during that time period, because there's a lot of games that are getting pushed in that time frame.
Let's see what happens at E3. Because next year, what do we have already at the beginning of the year already? We have, you know, the XCOM game, which I don't care about personally. I'll just go out and say that.
We have the Tomb Raider reboot and BioShock Infinite.
We have Ni No Kuni sometime in that time period. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're already going crazy.
Yeah.
With first quarter.
Yeah.
So
in fact, if I think of this carefully, we have probably just as many games announced for the first quarter of 2013 than we do this holiday season alone.
Fall, I'm not picking up a whole lot of stuff so far. We'll see what happens. Let's be fair here, though. I'm sure Nintendo's going to release some of its more secretive titles or titles that we've heard that we know is coming out mm-hmm. in the fall. And two titles come in mind, two 3DS titles, actually. You know, Luigi's Mansion 2
mm-hmm.
and Paper Mario.
Now, for you, though, like, I would recommend in August picking up Darksiders 2. Because that is a game that you actually don't need to play the first game in order to actually enjoy.
Well, there's two games in August I'm getting. That and Persona 4 Arena.
Okay. All right.
You know, so, there you go.
I thought you were going to say Madden.
Oh, fuck Madden. No. Persona 4's Arena is actually a sequel to both Persona 3 and Persona 4, so I'm down with that,
yeah,
story-wise.
You know, I have come to a realization about fighting games for me, and that I am not going to get that at launch.
Oh, no, yeah.
I am not. I really am not. And the main reason why is because, first of all, the last Arc System Works game that I really enjoyed was Guilty Gear X2, and I didn't really enjoy Blaze Blue. And even though, like, this has Persona 4 plastered all over it, I can wait.
Okay, well, I'm gonna get it.
Yeah, I will pick up Persona 4 Golden though, because that is, you know, that is more worth my time, I think.
I think both are worth my time.
Yeah. But, considering that it's coming out at the same time as Darksiders 2, Darksiders 2 will take my time.
We'll see what happens. I mean, August is going to be interesting. September seems pretty barren. Yeah, and what's funny is we have a new Halo. Usually Halo comes out in September, but, you know.
There have been Halo games that have been released in November, too. But, yeah, September has been kind of the go-to day for Microsoft, yeah.
Not no more.
Yeah.
Not this year. So, mm-hmm. they're trying to compete with Call of Duty or something. I don't know. But
I know that I want to get Hitman Absolution, and I want to say it's coming out in either October or November. And Assassin's Creed 3, I'm definitely getting that in October. Borderlands 2, I am not feeling that game. I never really felt it with the first game, and the second game is kind of the same thing for me. Like, I'm not sold on it too much.
I agree. I agree with you on Borderlands 2. I'm feeling Resident Evil 6. I know you're not. So mm-hmm. that and Assassin's Creed 3 are surefire purchases. Persona 4 Golden sometime in the fall, whenever that's going to come out.
The Last of Us, I'm definitely getting.
Okay, Last of Us, that I'll add that. I'm trying to think. Really, fall's kind of barren. Yeah. But then again, like I said, Nintendo, I'm sure they have some stuff up their sleeves. Mm-hmm.
And before, like, Call of Duty fanboys basically get angry, yes, I am picking up Black Ops 2. Come on, do we really need to mention Black Ops, you know, Call of Duty at this point? Like, it comes out every freaking year. But this particular one, I'm definitely getting. So, there you go. Done deal.
I might get it. I don't know. I told you had me. It sounds good. I'm just still a little cautious.
It's going to be a good game. I don't...
I'm sure it is. I might just rent it. I don't know. I'm more excited for Halo 4. But then again, you know, I've told you I'm still scared about it, so...
Well, that's the thing. You're skeptical about both games, but I have this really strong feeling that Black Ops 2 might even win Game of the Year this year. I know that sounds really ridiculous. Ugh. That sounds really stupid because, of course, I haven't even played the game. But I have this gut feeling that that might win Game of the Year. Not because it's riding on the Call of Duty name, but it's because of the stuff that they did to make the franchise fresh again.
I don't know. We'll see. Call of Duty has never been a game of the year. It came close in 2007 because I think Modern Warfare, the original Modern Warfare, is one of the best games of this gen because it just kind of punched you in the face a couple times. Yeah. But yeah. So there you go. So what other news do we got?
Okay, so I have new Castlevania details for you.
Ah, okay.
So these got leaked out by somebody, and I'm not gonna say who that somebody is. I'm pretty sure you can find who it is. Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2 is in the works for PS3, 360, and get this, Vita and Wii U.
PS3 version for me.
Yeah, it's interesting, but Vita and Wii U, like Vita, a Vita version.
Wow.
A portable version of the same game that you're getting on the PS3? Now that is interesting.
Oh.
Like, how's that going to be? Is that going to be, like, you know, kind of like that Ruin game that Sony showed where you can actually take your save on the go and then just, you know, like, have that transferring thing that Kojima was talking about, like, you know, about a year ago? You know, it's... The possibilities are endless, but that's really, like, the only information that I have about Lords of Shadow 2.
I'm curious about who you play as. Now, I'm not going to tell you... If you never beat it, right?
I never beat it, but I know what happens in the end.
Okay. So that begs a question about protagonists and things. Are they going to explore other protagonists? You know, take classic, you know, Castlevania characters and reinterpret them? Like maybe some of the Belmonts or even Alucard or Richter or somebody?
That would be interesting.
Like, have new takes on those characters.
Mm-hmm.
Because it did have, what the reboot did was it basically set up the stage for the new Castlevania, for that new universe.
Yeah, no more like, oh, Dracula only like wakes up every 100 years bullcrap.
No. It is set up a story, and I can't say, that epilogue is like one of the greatest epilogues in recent memory.
Mm-hmm.
It is just so cool, and I just can't say enough, but let's say there's enough room for them to play.
Mm-hmm. And the question is, though, it also begs the question of the setting. Because of the epilogue, like, you know, where it's actually held, you know, is it going to be at that time frame or time frame before it, in between? You know, the mind reels with the possibilities.
And another thing, too, is that they nailed with Lords of Shadow is the voice acting.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get Robert Carlyle, who's a hell of an actor.
Mm-hmm.
He's in tons of stuff. And, of course, you need fucking Patrick Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
You need Jean-Luc Picard again. I mean, you know, there was a couple other people. I think Jason Isaacs, maybe? He was the main antagonist in that game. There are some pretty well-known names that did voice work for it. So I would like to see both Robert Carlyle and Patrick Stewart come back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you need those two.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I want to see them do reinterpretations of some, you know, I want to see their version of Alucard.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
We'll see. Right now, I don't want to really kind of speculate because I did like the first game and just it strays so far from the Castlevania timeline that I don't even know what to expect.
Yeah, that's the tricky thing.
And I will leave it to them to try to figure out where to take the series, because I do want to be surprised by, you know, their direction and stuff.
I can't help but speculate.
Yeah, yeah. But let's talk about the other Castlevania game.
Okay,
which is Mirror of Fate for the 3DS.
Okay, so is this classic timeline?
Now, here's the thing. It says here that it's been in development for about a year and a half, and it was actually originally planned as a Wii U title. So, you know, like, the stylus part was supposed to be the part where on the tablet and stuff like that. They said that because it's on the, you know, because it's on the 3DS, and that Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2 is on the Wii U, that it may include potential connectivity with Lords of Shadow 2 once they both come out. It is a 2D Castlevania adventure, but starting two different characters, kind of like Portrait of Ruin, and check this out, with co-op play.
Nice.
And actually, the title comes from the fact that the front of the 3DS has a camera which can act like a mirror, while the rear is actually, from what it's rumored, can be used for some sort of puzzle mechanic that's been unrevealed. And get this, both games are being developed by Mercury Steam.
Okay, so not EGA.
No. But there is a rumor that it's, you know, that he might be involved in some way. And, of course, I think we're going to see this at E3.
I'll still pick it up if it's in the new timeline.
Mm-hmm.
But a part of me still wants, I'll be honest, I don't want to see the original timeline become obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is what it is. It's goofy at times. Mm-hmm. Let's admit that the original Castlevania timeline is goofy.
Now, goofy is like an understatement, and more like messed up.
it's messed up, but it's goofy. I mean, the original timeline, the thing about that is the people who often attack Lords of Shadow, they say, oh, it's scarier and stuff. I'm like, you have anime girl witches attacking you, anime cat girls attacking you, mm-hmm. you have naked plant and anime girls attacking you. You kind of see the point that I'm trying to make here.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by goofy. Yes, there are some messed up bosses,
mm-hmm.
some jacked up ones, but there's some also very goofy stuff going on and very anime-ish stuff. So it's very different from what Lords of Shadow's trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I still see an appeal to that, and I still like that, so I would like to see original timeline stuff. Well, as well, as big as a fan as I am Lords of Shadow, I still want to see both timelines.
Well, I think that there is an opportunity to make them coexist. Like the other timeline would basically be, you know, not to say that it's bad, but cheap, you know, development, you know, kind of costs, very quick 2D, you know, like traditional 2D kind of stuff, you know, like so that, you know, like it's not encroaching upon the cost of something like Lords of Shadow. You know what I mean? So
right.
It'd be something quick that they can kind of drum up to make money out of. Because there are, like you said, there are fans of the original kind of, you know, like gameplay of Castlevania. And I think that you're right. Like they need to kind of service both, not just, you know, the newbies and stuff to the Castlevania series.
And the last game in the original timeline, Order of Ecclesia.
Mm-hmm.
I love that fucking game.
Mm-hmm.
That is a great game. Have you played it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. The narrative flow on that is actually really interesting. Very different from a lot of the games that came before it.
It's a wonderful game. So I don't know. We'll see what happens at E3. Again, more evidence that this E3 is going to be kick-ass.
Yeah.
So we'll see. And then there's a couple 25th anniversaries, from what I understand, going on.
Yeah, we will talk about that later.
Okay.
Yeah. Next one is pretty important, I feel.
Okay.
Diablo 3 shatters PC sales records. Now, when was the last time we ever heard of a PC sales record getting shattered? This is awesome. And people say that, you know, like I'm a PC hater, but this is actually some of the best news I've heard in a long time about PC gaming. And I'm really happy about this. Diablo 3 sells 6.3 million copies so far. And guess how many, like, people bought it within the first 24 hours?
Well, it proves one thing. There's still a market for retail.
You didn't
PC
guess
games.
It. It's 3.5 million people bought it within the first 24 hours.
Okay, 3.5 million.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then that clarifies what I was going to say. There's still a market for retail PC games.
Not just, well, here's what Blizzard was smart about with this. They weren't smart about the whole save system and stuff. We know that it has problems. We've talked about it at length in the last episode. But what's smart about Blizzard, and it's always something that I commend them, is that they know that there's also an unserved market on the Mac.
Ah.
Well, what I would be interested in is to see the breakdown of how many PC gamers there are who bought the game versus the number of Mac gamers who bought it as well. Because I could guarantee you that like the number of Mac owners that actually bought the game, you know, is pretty substantial. And I'm not talking about five or six people. I'm talking about, you know, either hundreds of thousands or at least a million. You know, and the people who are smart to target both audiences are the ones who really earn a lot of money from it. Like, you know, Blizzard obviously does that on day one all the time, you know, and, you know, Steam games, you know, like Valve does that too from time to time. Like they did that for Portal 2. They released, you know, the Mac version of Portal 2 at the same time as, you know, as Portal 2 on the platforms and, of course, you know, PC. And they find that there is value to taking a little bit more time to try to port the game onto the Mac because, you know, in a gaming environment on the Mac, and not to belittle the gaming environment on the Mac, where the most popular companies on the Mac are either PopCap or some unknown developers, you know, or I forgot the guys who port like PC games to the Mac, or those guys. Like, you know, it's like if you time travel back to the Stone Age and they show them a computer or your iPhone and stuff, you're God. You're a God. You know, like if you release a really good game on the Mac, of course they're going to buy it. What else are they going to buy on the platform?
Right, right. You know? Well, I will, you know what I think this attributes to?
What?
I think what hurts PC sales is that most games that get released on the PC are also on the consoles.
Yes, absolutely. I absolutely agree with that sentiment.
So what happens is you have all, you know, me evil console people.
You know, right?
Yeah, the PC, you know, the PC elitist out there that despise my kind. We buy all the console versions and, you know, everyone buys console versions just because it's more convenient. Mm-hmm. That's why.
Yeah.
And that's what hurts PC. What the PC needs is what made it so successful back in those days, and why I go to places like GOG.com and stuff, was it had exclusives.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have as many exclusives as it does as it used to.
Because that's just people are too lazy to properly port their games onto the PC.
Right. So what this proves is there's still a PC market. And what this could do, hopefully this is a good thing and this is a change, is more developers will say, oh, look, there's a PC market and we could develop games that are not MMOs.
Yes, that's important.
That are not MMOs, games that used to be, that we used to make on PC once again. And that's why PC was so, we used to thrive so much until about the mid-2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Till about maybe 2005, 2006.
Let me add an addendum to your MMO statement. MMOs or FPSs.
Okay, good point. Because there's a lot of three FPSs. One that comes to mind is Combat Arms.
Mm-hmm.
So, stuff like that. But what I'm saying is they just need those exclusives like they used to have.
Mm-hmm. And they are coming. I know that THQ is making Company of Heroes 2, which is actually a really good real-time strategy game, and they're finally releasing a sequel for it. Surprising that considering that THQ is in the dumps, but they're making like a sequel to a like game that, gosh, sold like millions back in the day.
I'm sorry, but RTSs are just better on PC.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fact. I'm not an opinion. It's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
They don't work as much as a console gamer as I am. I can admit that.
Mm-hmm.
I will also say that it would be nice to see some of the classic point and click style, not adventure games, but RPGs, because those work very well.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like because if you really look at something like Baldur's Gate,
mm-hmm.
its combat system, it's kind of a very modified version of a RTS type combat system.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I always felt.
Yeah. There's some really good stuff, though, like coming for the PC other than these games. And I think you have something going on with what you're saying, you know, looking at the single player RPG market on the PC. I think there's a lot to kind of exploit there in terms of that market. I think that, you know, because actually, as difficult as it is to program for the PC, it is cheap. It is right. It is very, you know, cost effective. And I think that there's still room for a good single player RPG on the PC. And I am probably going to get crucified by this, but the last really engaging kind of RPG experience that I had, you know, using, you know, user patches and stuff that I played on a PC was Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines, which came out, I think, like, you know, like a few years ago, which was made, you know, with the Source engine and stuff. And it was buggy, but, you know, fans of the game actually fixed it and stuff. So it's playable now.
And then you have stuff like Neverwinter Nights that is just unique in itself.
Yeah.
Neverwinter Nights, I still play to this day, and there's a reason. There's nothing like it.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing like Neverwinter Nights on the market. Even the second one, which I guess from what I understand is a little bit more like the original. There's still an active community for Neverwinter Nights, the original.
Mm-hmm.
Came out 10 fucking years ago, Alex. 10 years ago.
Well, I can believe that, because in order to actually get into BioWare, if you want to start video game writing, you actually have to make a Neverwinter Nights module and submit it to them as part of your resume.
Yeah.
This is true. Like, my friend was actually trying to apply to it and stuff, and he was trying to ask me how to build, like, a Neverwinter Nights module. I'm like, dude, internet, Google, use it.
Well, he's probably asking because there's scripting involved.
Again, Google, internet, use it.
But anyway, like I said, I've never seen anything like Neverwinter Nights, ever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even the second one, while it has some of the features,
mm-hmm.
Neverwinter Nights, again, is a unique experience in itself, and it's on the PC only.
Yeah, I think you're onto something here. I think the PC needs more unique experiences that you just cannot, like, justify bringing to a console, or it would be rather difficult to do. Like, the reason why PC gaming thrived in the beginning too, because, of course, you know, because FPSs were really, you know, thought to only have existed, like, on PCs, just because of the game, the kind of control mechanisms that allows for it. But then, you know, there's, like, a combination of, you know, like, just software maturity that made it possible on consoles. And I think that we're at that time where we're seeing games, like, really creative games like League of Legends and Minecraft, that really kind of show us that, hey, PC gaming is still around and it's still just as popular as it was back in the day. And I have a weird feeling that we're going to see, like, a renaissance in PC gaming within the next few years. I'm not talking about casual gaming. I'm talking about some brand new stuff that we're going to see within the next few years.
Yeah, I hope it happens, because I, you know, we're not bashing consoles, by the way. Just let's clarify that real quick, because there's going to be people who think we are.
Yeah.
Consoles in themselves have unique experiences that you cannot experience on PC.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like, you know, like the same way I feel like an RTS does not belong on the console.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be people that say, oh, you know, you can use a control pad. Fighting games just don't seem right on a PC.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you, I don't know, there's just something odd about
there's
it.
There's also platformers and all that other stuff, too. There's certain games that, of certain genres that need to exist on a particular platform. So,
But I'm on the stance that I like games. I don't like platforms.
Right. I like games. If there was an opportunity for me to be able to communicate with my friends when I'm on my 360 on the PS3, I'd take it.
Exactly. Or, And like I said, I've said millions of times to you, a good game is a good game.
Mm-hmm.
If it's on a PC, it's a good game. It doesn't matter what it's on.
It's the
game. A good game, it's the game. If it's a good game, it you know, whatever it's on is completely secondary. It's the quality that matters.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Okay. All right, let's blow through these next ones. Yakuza 5 is announced.
Okay. So, are you down for it?
Oh, yeah, totally. And guess what?
Me too.
And I predicted this. when we're talking about binary domain several months ago, Yakuza 5 is getting a brand new engine.
Cool.
So guess what the engine is?
What is it?
Probably the binary domain one.
Nice.
The change, and they even said that they're talking about a little bit of details here. The change between the transition between the adventure mode, the combat mode, will actually be smoothened, and the in-game maps will actually be bigger and have actually more stuff to explore. That's a good thing.
I'm glad there's a following for those games here in the States. Not the biggest, but there is.
Yeah, me too. Finally, it's being acknowledged.
It's a good series. I don't think it gets the respect it does. But then again, I think a lot of that does because it's so heavily set in Japanese culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what segregates it.
Yeah, it's the whole kind of like, it's foreign to us kind of idea.
Yeah. So Yakuza 5, yay. Mm-hmm. What else?
Let me talk about the other stuff. So So the game will be held in four different locations. So it'll be Nagoya, Osaka, Fukuoka, and Hokkaido. Somehow Tokyo is not there, which is kind of curious. And it will have five different protagonists. If you remember in Yakuza 4, you had four. Now there's five. One is Kazuma Kiryu, of course. Taiga Saijima. Saijima is in the previous game. Shinakiyama. He was in the previous game as well. And Natsuo Shimada was brand new. And guess what? You can play as Haruka now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that Haruka.
Okay, is she like older now? Like she
I would imagine, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So the game will be out in Japan this December.
And hopefully we'll get it afterwards. We probably will.
March? Probably. Because we always get like Yakuza games in March.
You know, I have Dead Souls. I have yet to play it.
I heard that Dead Souls is the last game to use the old Yakuza engine.
I'm a little curious. I might play it sometime down the line. I got other stuff I got to take care of first.
You also need to finish Yakuza 4.
Yeah, I have and I have this, RPG dilemma going on.
Well, yeah. I mean, Yakuza 4 is an RPG in itself. That in itself is like a 20-hour game.
I think Ghost Recon should be, it's going to be my period to clear my head. So
we will see.
We'll see. Anyway, what other news?
Bad news. BioWare lays off unannounced number of Star Wars The Old Republic staff. And the way that I'm going to talk about this is actually by reading a message posted on the Star Wars The Old Republic forum posted by Greg and Ray, the guys who, of course, run BioWare. Says, hey folks, since you're reading this, you may likely have heard that we've done some restructuring here on the Sweater team. I'm just going to call Star Wars The Old Republic Sweater. I've stolen that from Jeff Cannata, who is the host, one of the hosts on Totally Rad Show and various other stuff. Anyways, sadly, we are bidding farewell to some talented, passionate, and exceptionally hardworking people who helped make Sweater a reality. Impacting people's lives this way is always very hard, but we're ensured the affected people are treated with dignity, fairness, and respect. Looking back at the launch, we all came together and did something historic. We executed one of the largest, most successful, and stable launches of any MMO yet in industry history. This is not an easy feat for any development team or company, and we are humbled and honored by our fan community's strong support both at launch and beyond. Looking forward, the studio remains vibrant and passionate about our many upcoming initiatives for Star Wars The Old Republic. We still have a very substantial development team working on supporting and growing the game, and we feel that we are in a strong position, with your continued involvement and feedback, to continue to build Star Wars The Old Republic as one of the most compelling and successful online experiences in the world today. There are many strong initiatives planned for cool new content and new features that we're excited to tell you about in the upcoming weeks and months. Rest assured that we remain dedicated to delivering a high-quality service in Sweater to you, our fans, and we will continue to support and grow Star Wars The Old Republic over the weeks, months, and years to come. Thanks,
Sweater.
Greg and Ray.
Sweater. Oh, I'm sorry. I laughed through half of that.
No, it kind of makes it sound like a Chinese sweatshop, doesn't it?
Yeah, it did. I was like... So, I don't know. I'm...
What do you think about Sweater?
It's not the World of Warcraft killer, I'll tell you that much, that everyone was hoping it would be.
Nope. Again, this is most like the reaction that the community, you know, had is just common. It's nomadic. They'll move from one MMO to another. Right now they're probably in Terra, you know, like that Korean MMO, you know, and
yeah, that made quite a big splash. Terra,
yeah, and then right after that they'll move on to Guild Wars 2. You know, it's just the nature of the MMO.
And if Final Fantasy 14 2 is good, they'll move to that.
We'll see.
Oh shit!
I mean, that's not even released on the PS3, so.
But
anyways, so that's sad. You know, our deepest kind of feelings go to the people who got laid off on that. That's never fun, getting laid off, you know.
Yeah.
So next one you'll be happy about, maybe. So LA Times, I don't know how, they published the contract between Bungie and Activision and reveals details about their next game.
Okay, I'm interested. What do we know about Bungie's next game?
So currently it's codenamed Destiny, and it's going to be released as a timed exclusive on the Xbox 360 and its successor in the fall of 2013. So the contract states that there will be 4 games that would be part of the series, and that there will be 4 DLC packs codenamed Comet, which will be released in between the games themselves. The sequels will be slated for a PlayStation 3 successor and the PC. So basically, we're talking like it'll probably be released on the Xbox 720, if that's the code name for it, and the PlayStation 4, and of course the PC. Destiny is going to be a sci-fi fantasy game, and it's also going to be a shooter. The other surprising thing, too, is that Bungie is also working on a brand new Marathon game. But the contract says that no more than 5% of Bungie staff can work on it while they're working under Activision. So it seems
Can I talk about Marathon real quick for a second?
Let me just add something real quick. It seems like because it's only 5% of the staff, that Marathon game might be DLC, like a downloadable game.
Okay. Well, here's the thing about Marathon, okay? Mm-hmm. You think of Bungie, you think of Halo, mm-hmm. obviously. The thing about Marathon is, and if I don't know if you've ever played them, but Marathon always had a very dark storyline, and deeper than even Halo, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting was when they moved, I played Marathon on the Mac, on my friend's Mac, back in 94, 90, 95, 96.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember liking the story and being just absolutely fascinated at how deep the story was.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved to Halo, and as much as I like Halo, Marathon is actually a little bit more deeper and even darker. Mm-hmm. And it even reminds me, if there's anything, and I might get lambasted for this, but I don't give a fuck, is I think it has a lot in common with System Shock 2 even. More so.
I can see that. I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I gotta say, you know, Marathon, a new Marathon game, they can keep that strong narrative going.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Right.
Why not? What do you think?
Yeah, Marathon is one of those games where it's like really interesting to play now because it's, you know, of course it has archaic kind of control schemes, but the storyline is really dark. I'm more interested to see what Destiny actually is. And I'm hoping that at the very least we see some sort of kind of teaser or trailer of it next year. But if this is any indication, though, Anthony, when they said that this game is going to be exclusive, a time exclusive for the 360 and its successor in the fall of 2013, I have a feeling that the next Xbox is going to come out next year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I think that's the target for both that and the PS4.
Mm-hmm. I think that what we're going to see is that Microsoft is going to market Destiny heavily as the killer app for the next Xbox.
Well, next year is going to be interesting if the new consoles come out.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a race between them and Sony to see who gets it out first.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just hope we don't see a bungle or a fuck up like you did back in 95 when at the very first E3, remember that?
Yeah.
Sega Saturn's supposed to come out come out, you know, in September, but we released it today.
Well, here's what I'm hoping for the next systems, and this is kind of tangential. I hope that the next Xbox isn't as bugged as Xbox 360. I mean, there's so many crappy stuff about the Xbox 360 that you still hear people getting red rings. Like, development kits getting red rings. That is just poor design. Like, I don't know who designed the Xbox 360, but I'm hoping he left the company or been fired, like, years ago. Like, that is just not smart design, you know? Like, I know they're trying to be, like, you know, Apple and trying to cram everything there. Hey, guess what, guys? The reason why Apple is able to, like, cram all that stuff in there is because they're using laptop parts. And in any case, you know... The guys designing the Xbox 720, whatever the hell it's going to be called, please make this like a really good system that is not riddled with problems. I do not want to hear anything about, like, you know, it being, you know, red ringed or blue ringed or whatever the hell ringed it is. I just want a functional console, you know. And this goes with Sony also, you know. Like, I hope it's not that expensive. I don't live in a mansion. I'm not earning like millions of dollars. Make it affordable, you know.
I agree.
We'll see.
But one thing is evident.
What?
Microsoft and Bungie are, it's not like Bungie left on completely bad terms.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
obviously
we will see next year.
We'll see if these, and again, these are rumors.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
This is from the contract. This is straight from a contract that Bungie and Activision has.
Oh, okay. So it's not a... I think we might hear something about this game at this E3. Who knows?
Yeah, if Activision is smart, they will like at least tease it. Because this is good PR already, and it's creating buzz. They should ride that buzz all the way till it's released next year.
What I think is going to happen with this Project Destiny is that the first game will be on the 360, and then its sequels will be on its successors. That's what I'm thinking.
I see.
I think. We'll see. So. Yeah.
Okay, so the next thing is, of course, the one that you hinted at earlier, which is Street Fighter 25th Anniversary Collector Set announced.
From what I'm understanding, even at E3, again, I keep talking... Well, we're just close to that time, right?
Yeah.
There's going to be several 25th anniversary announcements. That one, I know Final Fantasy is also another one. There is the Metal Gear one too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's just a lot of 25th anniversaries this year.
Yeah, but let me outline what this is. So, it's going to be for PS3 360. It's going to come in a huge collector's box. It will contain the following games: Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo HD Remix, Street Fighter 3 Third Strike Online Edition, Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition with all of the costume DLC, Street Fighter Cross Tekken with all character and swap costume DLC, and it will also have a 2-disc Blu-ray set, which, think about this for a second. Let's pause for a moment of silence. The 360 version will have a Blu-ray pack in.
What the fuck?
Isn't that weird?
What's on the Blu-ray?
It'll contain a documentary on the franchise's influence on fans and vice versa, and it will also include the Street Fighter 4 and Super Street Fighter 4 anime movies. From what Ted was telling me, Super Street Fighter 4, the anime movie, was not released here. All of the episodes of the Street Fighter 4 animated series and the original Street Fighter 2 animated movie, which is the anime, of course, not the Jean-Claude Van Damme one.
The good movie.
Yes. But whether or not Chun-Li will be censored, it remains to be seen.
The shower scene?
Yes. In any case, it'll also include a light-up 8-inch Ryu statue, which features him mid-Shoryuken with flames lit from below. It'll have a, get this, an 11-disc soundtrack, which will feature game music for the past 25 years and will include remixes and fan-created music inspired by the previous games. It'll have a 64-page hardcover art book, which will include fan pieces submitted by professional and aspiring artists. It will have a replica of Ryu's belt, which is created to quote-unquote regulation specs. And it'll basically be modeled after, obviously, the one that Ryu is wearing. And it will also include his classic Furin Kazan, you know, like, I guess it's a phrase or something in kanji. And finally, a certificate of authenticity, which is individually numbered. It's coming out in September 18, 2012 for $149.99.
That's a nice package.
It's a very nice package. I've had two friends basically say that they're going to get this package on a system that they didn't buy these games on.
I might get it too. See if I get it on the 360. Again, the 360, it's not that big of a deal, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to get it on the PS3 and then sell my PS3 copy of Street Fighter Cross Tekken and get the 360 one maybe, but maybe not. Who knows?
I don't know. I do want to get it. I do own most of those games already. That's the problem.
See, that's the thing. I own most of those games on the 360, except for Street Fighter Cross Tekken, which I got on the PS3 because I wanted the Vita functionality. And, of course, you know, this comes out and bites me in the ass. So what I'm probably going to do is I'm probably going to sell the, my PS3 Street Fighter Cross Tekken. But here's the most important part about this, Anthony. How funny is it that last week Capcom basically identified the fact that the reason why Street Fighter Cross Tekken didn't sell is because they've been releasing too many fighting games, and yet they release a fighting game package, like, and announce it, actually, like, a week later. I mean, how weird is that? It's like, oh, by the way, we know why our games are not selling. There's too many fighting games. And because of that, we're going to release a package with all the fighting games that you might have already.
Who knows with Capcom? I don't think, you know what, I'll say this again about Capcom. They get a lot of hate, you know? I don't hate them, though. I still like them. I don't think they're as strong as they used to be, but they're not completely weakened either.
Mm-hmm.
So I still, there's a lot of stuff that I still like from Capcom. Don't get me wrong, man.
Dragon's Dogma.
Dead Rising 2, off the record. That's a really good game.
Phoenix Wright series, Ghost Trick. Yeah, Ghost Trick, all that stuff.
Yeah, they still make solid stuff. I think they just get criticized because they get a little too DLC happy and shit like that. So
yeah.
I think that... And a little too version happy as well, too.
Yeah, again, this is kind of proof in the pudding.
Yeah, we'll see. This is but you know what? This is a really, if you're, I want to get this just because I'm a Street Fighter fan and I want to honor the history.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see those documentaries on the street. I want to see that documentary.
I mean, those two disc Blu-rays seem very complete.
Yeah, yeah, they do. They really do. I will say, though, that while Street Fighter 2, the animated movie, is really good, I remember getting the special edition of regular Street Fighter 4, right?
Mm-hmm.
And watching that animated movie. And I remember that animated movie was kind of boring.
It was a shit turd, dude.
Yeah, it was pretty boring. Although I hope the Super Street Fighter 4 arcade movie is good.
We'll see.
We'll see. But I will say Street Fighter 2, the movie, is awesome. So
yeah. I agree. That Vega Chun-Li scene, oh, that was great.
That is such a killer fight.
Yeah.
That is such a good movie. So, any other news?
The last news article is also an anniversary. It is the 20th anniversary of Mortal Kombat.
Ah, so what are they doing for that?
Nothing. Actually, yeah, I wish I was kidding. They're doing nothing.
you know what's kind of funny that I thought about?
What?
They released the arcade collection last year. They re-released the movies on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they had the anniversary celebration a year on their 19th anniversary.
Yeah.
As opposed to the 20th anniversary.
I know. It's kind of shameful. But the only reason why I knew it was the 20th anniversary of MK was because GameSpot actually released a really nice kind of retrospective on the first Mortal Kombat game. And they actually managed to get Ho-Sung Park, Daniel Pacina, John Tobias, Ed Boon, and Forden, and I can name all of them. The original five people, other than the actors who made Mortal Kombat.
Poor Daniel Pacina.
They had two programmers, a sound designer, an artist, and a background artist. Five guys.
Wasn't it the Total Carnage team?
No, they were all from different teams. Like, Ed Boon worked on Total Carnage partway, and then he worked on that. Tobias was working on something else. Dan Toasty Forden was working on somebody else. Steve Barron was working on something else. You know, those guys were working on different projects, and then finally they decide, oh, let's try this. And again, it's a dream team of five dudes who had friends, you know, in the local, you know, martial arts studio, which, you know, like Daniel Pacino is actually, like, you know, kind of, you know, running and stuff. And the guy, like, I could, like, seeing Daniel Pacina after all these years, I'm like, yeah, that's Johnny Cage. That is totally him. Like, on the side view, that's totally Johnny Cage.
It's cool that they got him involved, because you know the whole story about how he got fired and all that.
Well, it wasn't that he got fired. It isn't.
Yeah, he did get fired. Here's the story. He promoted a game called Bloodstorm, which was like a follow-up to Time Killers.
Mm-hmm.
And those games are horrible. Go watch them on YouTube. They're horrible games. Mm-hmm. They're like animated versions, but they're trying to be super violent. Mm-hmm. Like, you could cut off arms and legs.
Yeah.
Pacina did an advertisement where he was dressed up as Johnny Cage for Bloodstorm.
Oh, I remember that.
Midway fired his ass.
Mm-hmm. Which is why Johnny Cage, like, I guess, didn't show up in part 3, I want to say. Until later?
Yeah. Poor Johnny Cage.
Yeah. But, because he was supposed to be dead or something. And then, anyways, because that's how they wrote him off, is because Goro killed him. In any case, so it was really neat seeing everybody and stuff in that video. If you guys haven't checked it out, go check it out. Just search for Mortal Kombat 20th Anniversary. It's so sad that they haven't done anything, but maybe in about 5 years, once they get to their 25th anniversary, they'll do something.
Nintendo did a good job with Zelda's, so maybe.
Yeah. Well, here's my thing. They were working on a HD port of the first game, where they actually were, I think if I remember correctly, they were redoing a lot of the sprites by actually posing people the same way as the previous actors and stuff. But I guess that got too costly or something, and which is kind of weird if you think about it, because five dudes made the original Mortal Kombat, and yet the Mortal Kombat HD remake or something, the redo, is costing more, which is kind of weird, you know.
What, you know, what's nice is some of those guys are still, you know, involved. The five guys,
yeah,
with the franchise.
Well,
you
except Tobias.
Tobias, yeah. NetherRealm Studios, I gotta say, they're a studio to watch. And from what I understand, their next game is not a sequel to Mortal Kombat, the new one.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't it? Isn't it something else?
Oh gosh, please don't let it be Shaolin Monks 2 or something like that.
No, I don't think it's Mortal Kombat related.
I don't know what it is. I'm not going to speculate, because I've been afraid of what comes out of that studio sometimes. You know, that studio was also responsible for Mortal Kombat Sub-Zero Mythologies and the Mortal Kombat Special Forces and, you know, the Shaolin Monks game. So I'm going to shut up about that.
Mortal Kombat Mythologies was the Mortal Kombat platformer.
Yes, a Mortal Kombat platformer. And the prequel to Mortal Kombat 4, actually. People do not know that.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
And Mortal Kombat 4 is, I think, the weakest game in the series.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, half the time you're throwing rocks at people. I mean, what's Mortal Kombat about that?
I do like the continue screen, though.
Yeah, it's cheeky. It's clever.
It's pretty clever.
Yeah.
Okay, it's pretty clever as having Ryu strapped down and a chain blade coming down from the original Ninja Gaiden arcade game.
Yeah.
Okay, so any other news?
That's pretty much it, sir. We've gone through all the news and stuff like that. And sadly, because of the little hoo-ha...
One thing.
Okay.
One thing. And I want to ask this is going to be towards the audience. I want your emails. When we were talking about time trial, remember one of the games that came up?
Tomba?
Yeah, Tomba.
Okay.
Tomba has been announced to be released soon on PSN.
Summer,
yeah, sometime in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's released, I want to know if the audience would like us to do that as a time trial. What do you think?
That would be interesting.
Because it is from the creator of Ghosts and Goblins.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to see what we're going to do with time trial, because over the next few months, like I said, it's going to be busy. So it'll be less time for time trial. So we'll have to talk about that some other time.
We're still going to do it, though. I think
we'll have to talk about that. Yeah.
I want to do Jumping Flash.
I know. We'll have to talk about that. We're still doing Jumping Flash, but we will see. But anyways, let me segue back outside and kind of say, like, well, because of, like, what happened with the previous episode, the episode that got released, of course, was released a little bit too late, and we weren't able to warn people that we're actually recording on Wednesdays now. So just as a reminder, guys, our recording schedule is now every Wednesday, and the actual release time is still the same. It's still going to be released on Monday. And again, to reiterate, the reason why we're doing this is so that we can actually clean up the episodes and stuff a lot more. And by clean up, I mean no, you know, accidental, like, drops, no desyncing and whatnot, and, you know, so that we can, like, really increase the quality of the show. And, you know, who doesn't like a little bit more quality, right?
Right.
You know, so again, we're gonna basically, like, you know, kind of want your, you know, letters and stuff like that still. And the email address is, as always, is partychat@gamerhorizon.com. Once again, that is partychat@gamerhorizon.com. And it's, you know, we've enjoyed a lot of your letters the past few weeks and stuff, and we're going to continue enjoying them and reading them on screen, on the air and stuff. So
I got a question for him.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hear, so we can read some of these next week. I want to get at least a couple emails from people telling me, or you, both of us, what their E3 predictions are.
Yes, you're reading my mind, because they might be, like, you know, listening to this and, you know, and, like, maybe 2 weeks from now and stuff. That, yes, absolutely. Email us, partychat@gamerhorizon.com, your E3 predictions, and maybe we can make a game out of it. You know, maybe we'll take, like, all the kinds of, like, predictions that people have, put it on a board and stuff, and maybe play a game out of it or something. Maybe make a bingo out of it, like the other websites have been doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we'll talk about, because we have a couple things with that. I have a video planned, a panel,
mm-hmm,
for YouTube that you hopefully will, we can find a time you'll be part of. And then next week, we'll even talk about more about our predictions, too.
Yeah, we will see. That'll be really exciting.
Yeah, so it'll be all good.
Mm, absolutely. So, any case, so do you want to plug your stuff, dude, before we go?
Yeah. Speaking of YouTube, you can find my channel at www. Why did I keep saying that? Okay.
This YouTube. Is the first time that you've said that in weeks, literally.
I know. I'm still worldwide webbed out.
But you forget the last W.
Yeah. I always had that problem in the old podcast. YouTube.com/MegasX1. There you'll find my rants and all kinds of stuff about video games and anime. And you can find me on Twitter, MegasX1. And just a warning, I have a tendency to say things that are a little bit outspoken. So
and you get people angry.
Alex has seen, and it's not like I go around and I insult people. It's just I have very unpopular opinions on certain things.
Yes, you do.
And like, you know, when I said, remember the first time when I said I didn't like Braid?
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit, remember that shit storm?
Yeah, and yet people think that you're the more approachable of both of us, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, it is funny, because and then they still talk to me friendly, even though after I piss them off.
I know.
So
you're weirdo.
It's weird.
Yeah. Anyways, you can find me at twitter.com/eternityinblack. And of course, you can subscribe and download and listen to the latest episode of the Gamer Horizon podcast on gamerhorizon.com. And not sure if the new website is going to launch on time for E3, but we will try our darndest, because we do have a lot to talk about, especially when E3 comes.
E3, I'm excited for E3.
I am super pumped. Like, I can't wait. Just as pumped as I am with all the movies coming out. But that'll be a topic for another time. So until next week, we'll talk to you guys later.